Welcome, everybody. And do you need to?
I guess I should, yes. We'll put a subcommittee in the Senate Transportation Committee. Just kind of an overview of the first part. The Senate is meeting today till about 2:30. We're going to hear, in conjunction with the House, some more rail issues and take a look at a matrix after our last driver's license issue. The Senate has already done its part in moving something to the session for consideration. And the House will continue, and any members who want to continue to stay during the House meeting are certainly welcome to do so. That'll give you a kind of an idea of that part. And then I'll be, after our hearing on the rail issue, we'll turn the gavel over to Chairwoman Beyer for the rest of the session. Welcome today, again, and it's a beautiful, cold, crisp day in Salem. At least it's the wind isn't blowing 50 miles an hour. What I want to do is open an informational hearing on another rail issue, and colleagues on both the House and the Senate, as you know, we've been dealing with a lot of rail issues over the interim, and I think that what is valuable today, we're going to hear about another one, hear about the Short Line Railroad, hear about some of the customers, and kind of get an overview of some of the issues they face. We certainly have talked about the Tillamook Railroad, the Mount Hood Railroad, the Corp Railroad, and I think this is all beneficial to give us a kind of a background of just how critical our rail infrastructure is and our service, and hopefully as we move into session start putting together some type of rail plan to address the types of issues and what kind of partnerships we can form to have good economic vitality to our rural communities and using the rail system, and we also know how important that is also for mitigating the use of heavy trucks on the road with our transportation and trying to keep our roads in shape. So this will be an informational hearing. And with that, I would like to ask Mr. Vanell and Mr. Wayne Giese to come forward and talk a little bit about their rail. Yes. Welcome.
Hi. My name is Larry Vanell. We farm south of Corvallis. We have a facility there that we load rail cars, covered hopper cars, and also grass seed cars. The embargo that that we had that started in June of 2007 affected us greatly. We had products sold that we needed to get shipped to honor our agreements with the folks that we'd sold that to. We have found alternate places to load that product. It's costing us about $2,000 a carload to honor those contracts. We know the rail's in bad shape, and I think in 2000 there was some emergency funds that went to the Portland and Western. In that, the shippers also kicked in $49 a car for maintenance into that system. And looking back on it now, today, it should have probably been more from the shippers. It's pretty tough when you lose a rail system that you count on, and with the growing amount of wheat that's being grown in the Willamette Valley, we're looking at a logistics issue to even be able to move that product to Portland to the port. There's only one elevator up there that takes truck traffic. They unload about anywhere from 24 to 36 trucks a day. Typically in the valley, the last 15 or 20 years, there's been about 20,000 acres of wheat grown. This year, Oregon State University is telling us about 100,000 acres. And I would imagine if the pricing structure stays where it is for the next 4 or 5 years, we could be looking at 200,000 acres. So we really need to be able to get our product to market on rail. It's the only way to move that much material. For our farm, it means that we're going to put another 2,000 heavy trucks on the road to get that product moved.
Mr. Vanell, is that 2,000, is that during the course of a season, a year?
During the course of a year.
Okay.
as far as where we are, we're about 4.5 miles from town. We've talked to industry, the rail industry. They think that it would take about $1.2 million to fix the rail to our location. And just running some rough numbers, at a $750 a car surcharge, that should generate them somewhere in the neighborhood of $200,000 to $250,000 a year for us to put into helping them fix the rail. Over the course of 5 years, if we continue the amount of shipping that we're doing and maybe some more, we think that we could generate $1.3 million to help them with that. I think it's, like I said, it's a tough deal to lose. It's really put us in a disadvantage in the marketplace and where we were participating, and we're looking for any way possible to partner with the state and the railroads to try to get rail service back. And I think that Wayne has some other issues. There's a lumber mill on down further south.
Okay. Mr. Deasy, welcome. Mr. Chairman, members of the Joint Transportation Committee, my name is Wayne Deasy, and I will supply you with a little background. I represented Benton County in the legislature over 50 years ago, so I've kind of told you my age. I was a partner in Hall Oaks Lumber Company for several years, now retired, and I was point man for the Lower West Side and Bailey branches in the mid-1980s when we stopped Southern Pacific Railroad attempt to abandon the above-mentioned lines. This was the first time in the U.S. history that a Class 1 railroad was stopped in an abandonment procedure. This was done with the help of the Oregon Legislature, Dave Astle and Claudia Howell, PUC officials, Benton County, City of Corvallis, Oregon State University, and many others, including the shippers. At this point, Southern Pacific came to the Lower West Side and Bailey Branch and asked if we would consider short line service, and the Lower West Side and Bailey Branch agreed if we were guaranteed through line rates, that means to start from where they located on our line to the destination, and at least 20 years of service. 5 short line railroads showed interest. Dave Astle, PUC, suggested to Genesee and Wyoming to contact the Lower West Side and Bailey Branch for support, and Mort Fuller, whose family owned the Genesee and Wyoming, Forrest Beck, who operated a Louisiana, and if you notice I misspelled that, I do my own typing there, for the Genesee and Wyoming, and their comptroller made their first stop at Hall Oaks Lumber Company. To gain this support, about 1993, Genesee and Wyoming created Willamette Pacific Railroad, and the shippers could not have been more satisfied with the service until Genesee and Wyoming went public. Now they operate like a Class 1 railroad, and the bean counters are only satisfied the bottom line for the last 3 months. This attitude blocks funds for line maintenance and additional equipment. A good rail system in Oregon and the rest of our nation is extremely important, and I am a railroad supporter. I've supported assistance for the railroad from the Oregon legislature. And 3 or 4 years ago, while in Washington, D.C., I was asking Congressman Peter DeFazio for funds for maintenance on the Lower West Side and Bailey Branch, when Robert Grossman of Genesee and Wyoming, the Vice President for Governmental Affairs, stated he could not get an appointment with the Congressman and needed help. I have a very good relationship with the Congressman. The next morning, DeFazio, his transportation gal, Robert Grossman, Kim Smith, his General Manager of Government Affairs, and myself sat in the Congressman's office in Washington, D.C. and discussed funds to replace the railroad bridge at Albany, Oregon. I backed away from asking for funds to maintain the Lower West Side and Bailey Branch and supported the railroad bridge funds, as the bridge serves a great portion of the Willamette Valley West Side to get cars to the railroad main lines. Congressman DeFazio was successful in authorizing $8 million for the bridge. I thought for some of these efforts in behalf of the Lower West Side and Bailey Branch, there'd be favorable consideration to continue service on our line. This committee would be well served to subpoena the original contract between Southern Pacific and Genesee and Wyoming. I think you'll find that Willamette Pacific and Genesee and Wyoming are obligated to maintain the Lower West Side and Bailey branches in as good of condition as the lines were when they signed the lease. With this information, the state of Oregon would be in position to demand Willamette Pacific to repair these lines and restore service. For Willamette Pacific to deny service to Vanell Farms is atrocious. This poor
approximate 4 miles south of Corvallis serves Vanilla Farms and the Corvallis Industrial Park. The damage done to these two entities could run into several hundred thousands of dollars. One of the most important issues for this committee to establish a comprehensive transportation plan for Oregon that is railroad specific and not to lose any more railroad right-of-ways. Once they are abandoned, they never come back to service. We are very fortunate to have Congressman Peter DeFazio in such a powerful position in the Congress, and a comprehensive transportation plan is needed by the Congressman and will serve Oregon very well. Thank you for allowing me to present this information on rail transportation along with my shipper experiences and opinions. And I'd be glad to answer any questions if you have.
Thank you, Mr. Deasy. Well, I'll start off with Mr. Vanell. So under your current method that you're using to move your cargo, how long of a distance do you have to move by truck before you're able to access the railroad again?
Before we can find a suitable yard or location, we're about 25 miles. So we're under contract to load 100 cars. It'll be about $200,000 worth of added freight expense to us to honor those contracts. And we won't make those sales forward by car until we can get a secure rail service arrangement.
Do you have a... let's just forecast into the future, and let's say we don't have a resolution of repairing the line and having service. What do you see from your own business model as to how you would adjust to that, knowing, you know, the added expense that you're having to move the current products that you're growing?
The best way for us is to try to get service back to our location. We have looked and entered into some negotiations with Union Pacific to try to buy the 4.5 miles, rehabilitate it, to try to up to a standard that either the Portland and Western would service or another short line. We haven't really got all the details figured out, and it's taking quite a while to get through this process, and we're starting to lose hope that we'll be able to ship our products this summer that come from the fields.
Questions from the committee of Mr. D.C. or Mr. Vanell? Yes, Senator George.
Mr. Vanell, you pointed out that the port of Portland has just a limited amount of truck capacity. Comparing the tonnage that comes in by rail, because it's coming in from all over the country into Portland, what kind of tonnage can come in by rail and what tonnage can come in by truck?
The tonnage by rail is significantly larger. In our facility alone, it's nothing for us to load 7 covered hopper cars in one day. And with daily service, I mean, we could load virtually 7 every day. 7 hopper cars is roughly 21 to 22 truckloads. And we'd have a hard time loading 22 trucks or getting 22 trucks up to Portland if they're only unloading at CLD. If they're only unloading 24 truckloads a day, you can see Vanell Farms would tie up the whole place, and we're not the only ones sending wheat to Portland.
If I could, Mr. Chairman, a follow-up. One of the things I noticed when I ran down to Corvallis about a week ago, 99 is now bumper-to-bumper at capacity. Highway 5 from, say, the at the Corvallis at below Albany exit is at capacity. In fact, we probably need the lanes on that highway. There's probably other growers, as we are going to maybe shift back again to growing wheat again, that are going to have a choice of only putting it on that highway. I don't know where we go from here, and of course we talked about last session the idea that Highway 5 may be the western connector for an international highway coming from the tip of South America to Anchorage, Alaska. And so you're sitting here saying we better have these railroads functioning. When you look out, as you look north and you're contemplating how you get a truck up to Portland?
I virtually have drove the truck myself. And when I graduated from high school, we hauled wheat to Portland, and I can remember not seeing any traffic jams until you got virtually into the Twilliger turns. Now at 7 o'clock in the morning, we're down to 10 miles an hour from the rest area north.
That's correct.
It is just unbelievable the amount of car traffic out there. and the amount of truck traffic that we're going to save. And I just think it's a travesty that we lose this ability. For us, I mean, we would make the commitment to even load our neighbor's grain there to try to facilitate the whole neighborhood. I mean, we're talking about 60,000 acres worth of ag production. And like I said, if we see the world shortage in wheat and everybody's move in the valley to grow wheat, I think it'll only double in the years to come.
Thank you. Seeing no other questions. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
And Bruce Carswell.
Chair Beyer, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Bruce Carswell. I'm president of the Portland and Western Railroad. We're the second largest railroad in the state of Oregon and the largest short line or regional railroad in the state. We serve more than 130 customers, the northwest part of Oregon, the entire Willamette Valley, and several locations in and through the Coast Range. I also serve on the Rail Advisory Committee for the state of Oregon, and these sorts of issues, such as what we're discussing today, are exactly the sorts of agenda items that are on our on our schedule as we wrestle with a fairly significant concern. I won't read verbatim, but I will kind of hit the high points. The Bailey District for us is basically a microcosm of much larger issues, and recent high profile discussions that this committee and the rest of the elected and appointed officials within the state of Oregon have discussed, be it Coos Bay and their issues, Port of Tillamook Bay, Mount Hood, they're all related, and it gets back to the fact that the traffic densities on these lines don't generate the sufficient revenues to ultimately maintain the long-term infrastructure cost for those lines. And it is a very concerning issue if you believe some of the studies and analysis that ODOT and other entities around the state about not just the traffic today, but what we're looking at in the future through 2030. Transportation and traffic task is not going to reduce. It's going to increase and increase by a significant amount. So, the shoreline network is going to play a more important role in the future, and it already employs an important one today. The situation with the Bailey District, we've operated it now for 15 years. It was did come as Mr. Giese referred as part of a lease package with a larger portion of their network in the lower Willamette Valley. At the time we leased those lines, it was already identified as challenged. Track condition, it had many years of deferred maintenance. We have, tried to continue to operate it, but ultimately, safety has to be one of our number one priorities. And the condition of the railroad got to the point where mid last year we had a number of minor but concerning derailments, and we brought in some outside experts, and we ultimately were told that we had issues that it really had gotten to the point it was no longer safe to operate. We remain and have continued to engage in dialogue and discussions to try to figure out a solution, whether it's a sale via Union Pacific or some other mechanism, but at this point in time, as Mr. Vanell had indicated, we haven't yet found that solution. I think the role for the state is ultimately to really decide what's important with regards to the transportation network. The rail network, being privately owned for the most part in the state, has received over the years very little public funding. It has generated its own revenues and reinvested those revenues where the business dictates that it needs to go back. And as a result, some areas that are of critical importance to the state may not have gotten the investment that it should have as an ongoing business concern. Going forward in the future, I think we're going to have to look at a changed model there. There are portions of the rail network in the state that are of very strategic value to the state, yet without some sort of a public-private partnership or other involvement, I think we're going to find it hard-pressed to maintain those transportation corridors. I think as we move forward, the key issues that we're going to have to analyze and address are: how do we make investments in the network strategically? How do we protect the low density freight rail network, whether it be short line or even owned by the larger railroads? And how do we take into account the environmental benefits of rail, given that it is a much more fuel efficient and environmentally friendly mode? So with those comments, I guess I'll leave it open for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Carswell. I have a couple. One about the specific instance that we're talking about, and then the broader scope that you just addressed. And I think you'll find that rail is very popular on both the Senate and House Transportation Committees, both passenger, freight rail. Certainly as the state tries to meet benchmarks for carbon emissions, we all know how rail is really plays into that. And so it is really critical for us to find solutions that make things work. On the particular instance that Mr. Vanell brought up, and I certainly haven't squeezed numbers or whatever, but it would seem to indicate in terms of the short term that based on the cost of for these extra cars that might generate revenue that he was referring to, a couple $100,000 in additional revenue. If this was a 1.3 or what is somewhere in that ballpark $1 million fix to get this rail up to standard to maintain its safety, it would seem that would, and especially if entered into contractual agreements for them to provide that funding over a period of time, it would seem that you could use the bond market to upgrade that with that revenue stream. That would seem to be a tremendous amount of money. Has that been explored, or do you have different numbers on that? Or if I'm going the wrong direction, let me know.
Chair Metzger and the rest of the committee, I appreciate that. And those actually have been some of the same discussions that have moved forward. I think ultimately the challenge is that, when we go out and we spend 1.2 or 2 or 5, pick a number, for the most part that's a 50-year investment. And when you're in the agricultural business, making a contractual agreement more than a couple of years out becomes somewhat challenging at times. The state's role in a situation like this may be nothing more than trying to underwrite some sort of a financial agreement that if the wheat market goes south and all of a sudden there isn't the transportation that's occurring, that the railroad's not left holding the bag with an investment that ultimately now is not generating the revenue stream. I mean, those are some of the subtle issues, I guess, that'll be flushed out in the larger discussion. But I mean, you're right. I mean, if all things are equal and ultimately we could count on a revenue stream going out X number of years, we'd make an investment just like any business would.
Right. Well, that's kind of where I'm pursuing, and this is committee just my general thinking from 40,000 feet up. I mean, and I think during the interim we'll explore more of these things as we address some of the concerns with other railroads that I'm sure you have read and heard about for different reasons. But I know that this legislature, for example, is going to be considering being a bond backer for a new basketball arena at the University of Oregon, for example, in which the revenue streams are predicted to cover the cost of those bond sales, but it would be the state of Oregon that would back those bonds if, in fact, those numbers did not materialize. And we'll consider whether we want to move forward on that. But that type of a model, if that works for other things, may be something the legislature would be interested in doing in terms of how do we partner to ensure service, getting agreements, obviously, from the service providers that they have to make commitments to service. Obviously, those who are utilizing the service to enter into agreements to what extent is economically you know, possible to forecast. And then the state, you know, I think does have a tremendous interest. I mean, we were talking about hundreds of thousands of trucks as we're trying to maintain a crumbling infrastructure. You know, there's a public interest in trying to, you know, utilize rail effectively, trying to minimize the impacts of heavy trucking where we don't need to materialize that. And I think those are things this legislature, as we work at putting together a transportation package for the 09 session, I think would be very interested in doing, is making sure that our economic engine works with the railroad engine and provides service. So think of us as a partner who's willing to talk, and we're willing to sit down and see, you know, where the state's best interest is in moving the economy, the railroad's interest in being productive, and the guarantees that all of us then can make a business model that affects the quality of the state. And certainly your railroad is not the only one. I mean, this is, we need a rail policy for the state. And I think with all the things we have heard colleagues just in this interim, you know, one day after another, you know, the Siskiyou line has now been closed by Corp. I think we need to seriously address what is our rail future and how do we become a partner to make that happen. Questions for Mr. Carswell? Yes, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carswell, thank you for your testimony today, and we've heard you before, and I share some of your concerns. There was one word that you used, and I looked in your written testimony, and I didn't find it. You didn't purchase this line. It is leased. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I don't think I ever realized that before. And it seems to me that a lot of this, you mentioned that the track is 100 years old. So a lot of this is an issue to do with deferred maintenance, right?
Oh, and very much so, mm-hmm. Yes.
So it seems like the rail lines have taken the profits from their rail and yet aren't willing to put some of those profits back in to maintain the line. Am I correct in assuming that?
I can only speak with actual knowledge of my tenure of the last 15 years, but I do know as a general rule around the country that for the most part a rail line that was generating revenue would ultimately get investment. So the deferred maintenance, you know, that we inherited, I don't think was any systematic abdication of responsibility by the previous railroad, but a recognition of, you know, they would put money in as it was generated, and if a line was soft with regards to the density of traffic, you know, sometimes ultimately they didn't get the money that it required. So but you know, with regards to our tenure, you know, and our charge, I mean, we have put back into the railroad system around northwestern Oregon, you know, a large percentage of our revenues, in fact, beyond what most industrial entities would do. And unfortunately, this particular line segment, again, has the challenge that it, you know, didn't generate the traffic that allowed us to be able to protect that, and the monies we were generating elsewhere went to protect bigger issues with regards to, you know, denser parts of the network.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, could I do a follow-up?
Please.
At some point, could we ask the railroads to generate the information for us about how much money they did put into maintenance, et cetera, as opposed to the amount of money that was coming in? And could I ask also another question about the lease? So how long do leases run?
Chair and the rest of the committee, that this particular lease was 20 years. So 1993, we're 15 years through the lease. We've got 5 years left to run. You know, expectation is we would like to renew the lease at the end of that time and, you know, continue to operate it. But the contract with Union Pacific was for an initial term of 20 years.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carswell, just to try to clarify from Mr. Geese's testament as well, who has the responsibility for maintaining the condition of the lines in contract? Who is legally obligated?
The Chair Metzger and committee, the obligation in the lease contract ultimately is to, you know, is to keep the lines in condition necessary for operation. There are caveats in there. Ultimately, we're in a situation where a line like this that's not generating revenues, you know, ordinary wear and tear is something that has to be addressed on an ongoing basis. And, you know, if we're not able to, you know, accommodate that, ultimately, we could end up in a situation like this.
I do appreciate that, Mr. Chair. If I could follow, I was trying to get a clear answer. Are you, as the lessee, are you responsible, is your company responsible, or is the railroad that you're leasing the line from responsible? Which entity is responsible? And is there specific language in the contract that says if you do not reach this level of income, that responsibility is abdicated? And if it's abdicated, who's it abdicated to?
Chair Metzger, the contract is ultimately, you know, means we're the primary responsible party for maintenance. So, the way it works ultimately, you know, we would have to go back to the Union Pacific and renegotiate, a different or a changed circumstance on a line segment that was not paying its own way, so to speak. We have ultimately done that with Union Pacific on this, and their view is that ultimately, you know, this is not something that they're going to be able to solve. They've told us to engage in dialogue and discussion like this, and failing a solution that would come out of these sorts of discussions, you know, proceed jointly with abandonment of the railroad. So, the final outcome is potential abandonment, but in the meantime, you know, while they've engaged with Mr. Vanell on discussions about sale, anything else that would come, you know, as whether it's a public private partnership or whatever, you know, they've essentially left that totally within our hands to try to find a solution. But failing that, ultimately, put together a joint process to abandon the railroad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, we'd hope that any public private partnership would take into account whether maintenance was done on the rail line and whose responsibility was that. The taxpayers and the state should not be obligated to do that, which was the responsibility of another entity. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley. Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Carswell, good to see you. About 2 months ago, I was down in California, and I was actually shocked at the change that's occurred down in Central Valley, California, in the farming country, relative to rail. Sections that ran parallel to 99 coming down from Stockton, Merced, Chowchilla, and that area headed down to Fresno. A few years ago, I watched cars going down the railroad doing this, and now they're running at 70, 80 miles an hour on perfectly beautiful, smooth rail. When I dropped out to the west side, paralleling Highway 33, this is going, this would be out to the south of Fresno, going out to Fireball in that country. I saw an abandoned line that now has beautiful, newly installed long welded rail. Now, my question is, and this is something I understand that our Department of Transportation, Kelly Taylor with the Rail Division, is looking at in this, can you kind of give us an overview of what other states are doing? And I'm sure that that's probably public and private partnerships in order to make sure we preserve those lines. Because if I could add a comment as part of this question, one of the things that I've noticed is there was an immediate response to the fact that there was now very able rail available as far as development along the rail. And hopefully that could be a scene here. When you go out into my district to the west side out here, you're seeing amazing growth out there, new business, new industry coming in. A lot of those businesses, I'm sure, if they had an opportunity for quality rail, would be even stepping up faster to make investments in our rural community where we actually have a surplus of road capacity. We're not like Portland. You know, we have it. So it's a nice place to live and a beautiful place to invest, but we don't have this infrastructure. Tell me what other states are doing, if you could, briefly.
Co-chairs and the committee, thanks, Senator George. That's a good question, and I would say, you know, with the institution of the Connect Oregon and then the Connect Oregon 2 programs, you know, which obviously this panel was involved in, and the legislature definitely stepped up to the plate. From my experience, we're about in the middle of the pack with regards to starting to get serious about addressing these sorts of issues. Washington DOT has had a very active program over the last few years and actually really focused on rural rail, including purchase of lines that ultimately wouldn't meet any, you know, rational business test because of the strategic issue of not wanting to isolate those, you know, rural producers from the rail network, you know, knowing that things are going to change in the future. California, they've had in recent years a fairly active program for rail assistance, and some of what you've seen down there are results of that. other states around, like Idaho and Montana and those locations, haven't even started yet. And in fact, even within our own corporate parent, I do know in discussions with some of my counterparts, you know, there are certain states like Mississippi and that, you know, you can't even get an engagement in a panel like this about rail issues. It's not even on their radar screen yet. So I guess while we've got some significant challenges in front of us, we've at least started the journey on recognizing that, you know, highway transportation isn't the sole answer. There's got to be a well-rounded policy, and definitely we need to formulate and rationalize and improve that policy as we go forward.
Any other questions? Well, Mr. Carswell, I appreciate that very much, and I think it's really clear, members of the committee, that as we move through this special session and back into the hard work of the interim for the 09, is that the rail issues need to be a front and center with, as we look at transportation package for 2009. I think it's taken on a new importance since the end of session, as we have seen all types of issues impacting communities and the economy. Having a rail policy, having all the stakeholders at the table to discuss that and what everybody's role is, and how do we maintain quality infrastructure to move freight and to keep communities viable, I think it's going to be very, very important. And we'll look forward to working with you, Mr. Carswell, and Pacific and Western, and our Class 1s and all the others, with our shippers and the local communities of how we form solutions to make sure that we have a viable rail system. Thank you very much for taking the time to come.
Thank you.
Okay, we will be pursuing that issue. I'm going to close that informational hearing and turn the gavel back over to Chairwoman Beyer.
And we're going to take just a 5-minute recess and sit in your seats, and we'll be back. We're going to open a work session on LC 82.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on Legislative Concept 82.
Representative Reed has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on LC 82. Any objections? Seeing none. Motion passes.
Madam Chair, I move that we reconsider the vote by which the committee failed to recommend LC 82 for introduction during the February 2008 session.
Thank you. Representative Tomei moves to reconsider the vote by which the committee failed to recommend LC 82 for introduction into the February 08 session. Any discussion?
Madam Chair? Thank you very much, lovely. Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I will vote to support this motion. I do not like this concept. It's moving forward. I was hoping to delay it. We've delayed it a little bit to try to draw attention to it. We need to have this vehicle on the House side as well as the Senate side to work on to try to come up with a package that could conceivably do less damage than what we have before us right now. So I will back the motion.
Thank you. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this must be very confusing to the people who've come here to testify. And who testified earlier. As you can see, this is a very emotional issue for some of us here. It's confusing, I know, when you see that we're going to reconsider this. The reason is the Senate has already going to deal with this issue. They're going to deal with it in the Senate. There are several of us on this committee who feel that it's also important that we deal with it in the House. That's why we're voting to reconsider it, and we will be passing this today. It is not that I feel at all that this is a good bill, that I think that the repercussions of this bill are going to be very grave, that I think the unintended consequences will be so serious. So I will probably, Madam Chair, be voting against this when it comes back to committee. I will probably be voting against it on the floor. But today, because of how the procedure works, I will be voting to move this through the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other discussion, is there any objections? Seeing none, the motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move that Legislative Concept 82 be recommended for introduction during the February 2008 special session.
Thank you. Representative Reed moves LC 82 be recommended for introduction during the February 08 session. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Reed.
Madam Chair, thank you. I just wanted to echo the comments of the Vice Chair and note that I have concerns about some of the implications, but am interested in having the House be a participant in the discussions during the session, so I'll be obviously supporting the motion.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will support the motion and reserve the right to vote no on the bill. During the February session, I would like to ask the people who are going to testify here today to please come forward with suggestions on how we can mitigate the damage that this legislation is going to cause. As mentioned in the last hearing, this bill is going to pass. It's on greased rails to pass. It's going to come through. If there's any way we can improve this in terms of mitigating the damage and trying to help people who are simply trying to take care of their families, I know the House Committee is open to those discussions. We want to see if we can change the tenor of the debate on this issue. This issue is tearing our state apart, it's tearing families apart, it's tearing communities apart. We have to find a way to come together to help people. And thank you, Madam Chair, for your consideration.
Thank you. And I will comment that, again, this is not necessarily this. Well, for one thing, this is a procedural vote, which, again, if you're not here all the time, you probably don't quite understand that. All we're doing is moving this piece, this concept for a bill for introduction into the February 08 session, where there will be plenty of debate and opportunities to change or adjust the legislations in ways that it's needed. And again, I don't think there's any one of us on this panel that recognizes the problems that this is going to create, but there are already problems happening now that we somehow have to start to tackle, and this is the method that we're going forward with to do that. And with that, are there any objections? Seeing none, LC 82 will be introduced. And thank you, committee. And with that, we will go to a public hearing on LC 82 and LC 32. And Patrick.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We had a public hearing on LC 32 and LC 82 at our previous hearing. This measure requires a person to provide proof of legal presence in the United States and Social Security number before the Department of Transportation may issue, renew, or replace a driver's license. We have to come speak to the committee briefly before we start the public hearing. Tom McClellan from Department of Transportation is going to discuss some proposed changes to the concept. I believe he was prepared to come and speak to those if it's the committee's desire.
Thank you. Come on up.
Chair Metzger, Chair Byer, members of the committee, my name is Tom McClellan. I'm the Acting Administrator of the Driver Motor Vehicle Service Division of the Department of Transportation. I appreciate the opportunity to come before you today. We have met with your committee staff to better understand the intent behind some of the provisions of this legislative concept. And we do have some suggested changes to the language of the legislative concept. I would like to run by those with you this afternoon. About 12 or 13 of these requested amendments to the legislative concept. The first has to do with proof of a Social Security number. Changing the language to indicate the person satisfies the requirement of providing proof of a Social Security number by submitting a document that includes a Social Security number as determined by rule. There are different ways for an individual to prove that they have a valid Social Security number. We would like to list those potential documents in the rules that would be passed. Second item is a temporary driver's license, temporary driver permit, and temporary ID card. That be changed to a limited term driver license, limited term driver permit, and limited term ID card when referring to that card that ties the expiration to the length of an individual's stay. In addition, add that language to indicate the limited term license, permit, and ID card can be issued for no more than 8 years. we believe that's your intent, that it not be longer than what the current regular driver license and ID card is currently valid for. The third item deals with the renewal of those limited term cards. We recommend adding language to show that a limited term issuance may be renewed upon proof that the status by which the applicant qualified for that card has been extended or is still in effect. It's that still in effect that's important. There will be applicants who are only issued the card for 1 year because there is no date specific on the document that's provided when it expires. That same document may be presented in the future to allow an extension of the card. So we would recommend that there you add or still is in effect in the language. The next suggested amendment deals with the fee to be charged for those limited term licenses, permits, and ID cards. We recommend that you change the current language to allow for the limited term license fee to be different from the corresponding non-limited term license. Possible language additions could be except that the department may charge less for a limited term license, permit, or identification card depending on the length of stay. Or the language could be changed to reflect the fee for an original and the renewal of a limited term license, permit, or ID card. For example, the fee for an original driver license could be $25. The fee for a driver license renewal could be $10. The fee for an original ID card could be $10. And the renewal of the ID card could be $8. Persons receiving a limited term issuance should not be required to pay the full 8-year fee when they receive issuance that's for less than 8 years. The next requested amendment deals with the effective date of the limited term driver license, driver permit, and ID card. It is our recommendation that the date to begin issuing those cards be January 1, 2010. It's in Section 2. The department cannot complete the programming to allow an expiration of less than 8 years before that date. In addition, we'll need to work with our existing contractor to come up with a new card type for this type of limited term card. The next amendment deals with the verifying of source documents. We recommend adding permissive language, recommending that shall be changed to may, or add language to say as national automated electronic verification systems become available. This is a recognition that some of these systems just do not exist today. The SAVE system for immigration documents is available. We estimate it would take until January of 2009 for us to actually connect up and utilize that system to verify immigration documents. The systems dealing with birth certificates and passports are several months, if not years, away from being available for state motor vehicle agencies to use. So the permissive language would allow us to connect as those became available. The next recommended change deals with people who are not eligible for a Social Security number. Changing the language to read that if the person is not eligible for a Social Security number, they must provide proof that the person is not eligible for the SSN and proof of legal presence. The current language could be misinterpreted to require a person who is not eligible for an SSN to only provide proof of not eligible for an SSN and not provide proof of legal presence. We don't believe that was your intent in the drafting of the concept. Full legal name. Adding language to allow the printed name to be truncated, to be shortened on the cards, if all characters in the full legal name cannot be printed on the card. Currently, the face of the driver license and the ID card only allows 39 characters for the full name. We recommend the name on the card be truncated if the name is longer than the 39 characters. The full legal name will be collected on the application and retained, so we would still have a record of that full legal name. The next revision or amendment deals with the valid without photo and using previous photo. Separating the references of using a photo already on file from the reference to issue valid photos without valid cards without photos is important because the reasons for issuance are different. We'd like to specify that a valid without photo license can only be issued for religious reasons and for facial disfigurement, very specific conditions. Rules will be written to only allow the use of the previous photo on file for situations where the person is temporarily out of state and has lost their license, or for persons temporarily out of state who need to renew their license or their ID card, such as military personnel. The department will check the previous photo being used against all other photos in our database using the facial recognition biometric system that we're putting in place this summer. Another amendment to the concept deals with the applicant temporary permit and ID card. We recommend changing the interim back to applicant temporary card, which is what our current statutes have today. Changing the name of the applicant temporary permit and ID card to interim is no longer necessary if we change the card issued to persons based on their length of stay to a limited term card. There's a provision in the legislative concept dealing with applicant certification. We recommend removing language under penalty of perjury for proving eligibility for the ombudsman services. Instead, require a certification from the applicant stating that to the best of the applicant's knowledge, they are legally present and eligible for those services. And that's a recommendation on legal advice from our assistant AG. Next revision deals with the temporary license permit or ID card issued to persons otherwise eligible but unable to provide the necessary documentation. Revise it to allow DMV to issue an applicant temporary permit that does not have a photograph for up to 90 days, plus a 60-day extension if the applicant presents proof that they've attempted to obtain the necessary identity or date of birth documents, or to reconcile data that's in the database of the issuing agency. The most common example, we believe, would be the Social Security Administration. This would be subject to rulemaking, specifics of this process. Finally,
Chair, could I ask a question
yes.
about this? Thank you. So help me understand why they would not have a photo.
Currently, Chair Metzger, Chair Byer, Representative Tomei, currently today we issue a temporary applicant permit when we believe there's additional work that we need to do to determine the person is eligible. We'll issue a piece of paper, basically. It's a permit
right.
that allows you to drive. And upon needing to produce evidence of driving privileges, you can pull that out of your glove compartment or your pocket, show that to the officer, and say, I'm eligible to drive. We'd recommend that you stick with that particular documentation, because we already do that today, for this interim period while the person is working on obtaining the necessary documentation to get a secure driver's license with the full photo and like everyone else.
I understand that, if I may,
yes,
Madam Chair. I understand that, but I don't understand why you wouldn't include the photo, so because otherwise I can give my permit to Representative Byer, and she could show it. Do you see what I mean? If it had a photo, it meant that it belonged to me. So I'm just unclear about why you wouldn't require a photo on that piece of paper.
Chair Byer, Chair Metzger, Representative Tomei, that is one option. We would not rule that out. We're looking at the least cost implementation, basically.
Okay.
So if that is a provision you'd like to see in there, we would certainly provide you a cost and an estimate of that one.
Okay,
but
thank you.
That's the only reason.
I see. Okay, thanks.
Any other questions? Representative Becker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, thank you. You have one heck of a job, I have to say. I'd like to jump back, if it's okay, to the verifying source documents recommendation. Can you talk me through what that means? If the verification systems are not available until 2009 for SAVE and then somewhere longer for the other systems, how does that work when someone comes to DMV? What's going to happen with their documentation?
Chair Byer, Chair Metzger, Representative Buckley, the same process we use today. We have trained employees that know how to recognize what documents should look like to determine if they're fraudulent. If the person is coming back in for a renewal or a replacement, we have a photograph of that individual and some information about them as well. But we cannot electronically check with that issuing agency that is the data on that card or that piece of paper is what they have on file as well, except for the Social Security number, which we are implementing per the governor's executive order on February 4th. We'll be verifying all Social Security numbers that are presented to us with the Social Security Administration.
Very good. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
The last piece I would like to mention to you has to do with the fees to cover the costs. We recommend adding language to increase fees to cover implementation and ongoing costs of this concept, but to do that in phases. The first step would be July 1st of this year, 2008. Increase the fees by a set amount, which we currently estimate to be $1.50 to cover our costs. We're still finalizing our fiscal estimate on this concept. It'll be approximately $1.50 effective July 1st. That would be in addition to the $3 increase that we've been authorized through Senate Bill 640 from the 2005 session for the biometric check that we're implementing. So it would be $3 plus $1.50. Then on January 1st of 2010, when we're able to issue a shorter term, limited term card, we would increase the fee for all driver license, driver permits, and ID cards by an amount, approximately $1, I suspect, at this point, and establish fees for those limited-term cards, which would be at a lower rate than what we're charging for those who get the 8-year card. So it might be 25% to 50% of what the person pays to get an original or a renewal. This will allow our costs to be recovered and keep the state highway fund whole with that process. So just in summary, the changes that have been suggested for this concept will allow the Oregon Department of Transportation to implement verification of Social Security numbers and the visual verification of legal presence documents as described in LC 32. The department can begin verifying legal presence documents electronically with the Department of Homeland Security by January 2009, those are the immigration documents. These suggested changes will allow the department to verify identity source documents with the issuing agency as systems become available and work can be done to connect with those verification systems. In addition, the department will issue limited term driver licenses, permits, and ID cards to persons legally in the U.S. on a temporary basis beginning in January 2010.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Could I ask a question? Tom, we heard testimony when we had hearings before about homeless or other people who've lost all of their ID, people who were born and have lived in the United States all their lives, but they're homeless, they have no identification. So how would those folks be able to verify that they're here legally and be able to get some kind of ID card?
Chair Beyer, Representative Tomei, we will be working with the agencies and those organizations that work with the homeless, inmates, seniors who are perhaps more adversely affected by these changes than others, to provide the information they need to get copies, certified copies of birth certificates and other documents they may need in order to qualify and be able to obtain an original or a renewal replacement card. It's a matter of providing them with the information they need to obtain the documents in order to qualify.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom, a couple of things. First of all, at my request, Mr. Bob Donaldson of Black Helderline provided some just comments that I would ask the department to look at. Mr. Donaldson is a recognized immigration attorney with Nike and a lot of big corporations, and he offered, I think, some constructive comments about some of the language and would ask the department to look at that as you work on the amendments. The second thing is we also received written testimony, colleagues, from Lewis Pitt, who, of course, is with the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon, and he is concerned about the LC draft as it responds to tribal identification, which is covered in the governor's executive order but does not appear to be specifically listed as qualifying documents in the draft of 82-32. It would ask that, as you work with legislative counsel, that you look at his letter and see if appropriate language is necessary to provide confidence that tribal-issued ID from our native citizens is indeed clearly articulated as qualifying.
Okay. Yes. So I will.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you. And we'll go ahead, and we have a list of people that were here the last public hearing that didn't get to testify. We'll start with those, and we'll look at people who are here from a distance greater than 100 miles, and then we'll start on the newest. So, and 2 minutes each. We're going to try to get through as many people as we can, and we want to make sure that there's a lot of us here. I will read the first three names of the people that will testify, and since we have people in other rooms, I'm going to then read the next three names so they can come on down and be ready to testify. And with that, I think we're going to get started. Okay, and last time Senator Metzger got to butcher all the names, and today it's my turn to butcher. So I have a Sabino Sardinetta, David Sheffield, Sheffield, and Reverend Espinoza. If you three want to come on up. And the next three people are going to be Magdalena Sosito, Juan Garcia, and Bridget Cook. So these are the next three names. So if you're outside of the room, come on down. And go ahead, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, honorable members of the Transportation Committee. I am Sabino Sardinetta, Executive Director of Centro Cultural of Washington County, located in Cornelius, Oregon. For those of you who may not be aware of Centro Cultural, its founders were men and women who lived in Oregon migrant labor camps. In 1972, they banded together to form an organization to have a meeting place they could call their own and become a part of their adopted community while contributing to its growth and prosperity. In the 15 years I have been at Centro Cultural, I have learned that the people Centro serves are the same people that work the fields in the very rich Willamette Valley. They are the people that harvest the crops, that serve our tables, and work in very humble jobs for very low pay. These are the same people that are fleeing from extreme poverty and carry within themselves the pain and frustration of their own history. People that live with repressed memories of regimes that force them to leave their families and their own country searching for a better way of life. The Hispanic community is not new to the state of Oregon. Hispanics have been here since the 17th century, before the Lewis and Clark expedition. Spanish people were here training horses and taking care of ranches. Spanish people were here by the militias, were hired by the militias during the Civil War. Spanish people have worked the land and harvested the fruits and vegetables in the Willamette Valley since 1942. Spanish-speaking people have been praised for their contributions during good economic times and have become scapegoats and the object of dishonor during bad economic times, during recession times. The real urgent need today is a comprehensive immigration reform. So, what is the rush? Why is it wrong to wait until a complete solution is determined? Why are you targeting the economically disadvantaged community? We should rush to solve some of the most urgent problems of our society, such as homelessness, hunger, health care, affordable housing, and so on. Whose interests are we protecting with this executive order? Denying a license threatens the common good. Denying a license will affect our labor force, our businesses, and our economy.
So I know you're almost done, but we're... No.
What is at stake is the health of our communities, the livability in our cities, and the credibility of our leaders in the pursuit of happiness. At this juncture of history, we are full of hope. And we urge you to reconsider the executive order, to refer this executive, the execution, and to keep the hope of our citizens alive in the enjoyment of freedom, the rights and responsibilities that our communities, our state, and our nation have to offer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Beyer, Chair Metzger, and representatives, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Father David Schiffel. I'm pastor of St. Alexander Church in Cornelius. You have a difficult task before you as you consider Executive Order 0722 and its implementation, that is for sure. The issues are important. Support of our families, respecting the dignity of every human being, state and national security, and the economy. I pray that God bless you with wisdom and understanding as you address these issues. It appears that changes are needed in our current laws regarding driver's licenses in the state of Oregon due to past abuses. However, I am concerned about the direction in which we are going. I do not have the answers. The task certainly is not an easy one. What I would like to do today is merely share with you a few concerns, a few questions really to leave with you to consider in your deliberations. Is it the fault of our immigrant population that many are here without legal documents when the waiting period in many cases for legal entry can be up to 100 years? For years, in reality, decades, we have welcomed the undocumented immigrant to work in our country for the betterment of our economy and society, though often tacitly. Is it just now to turn them away as if they were criminals who have harmed our society, or punish them by not allowing them to drive? Is it the fault of our immigrant population that our state's driver's license has essentially become a state identification card? Can we not find a way to allow our undocumented immigrant population to legally drive for the good of our families, whose parents need to drive for school, church, and civic activities, for the good of the economy, since many need to drive to get to work and to do their work? Although certainly different, can we learn anything about our current immigration situation and adjust response to the issues by considering our past treatment of Native Americans, African Americans, and Japanese? Are we making mistakes similar to those we have made in the past? Your decisions will affect tens, if not hundreds of thousands, of people directly and all of us in the end. I pray for a prudent and just solution to the issues we are addressing here, respecting the dignity of each human person for the betterment of all our people in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, it's hard to follow Father. I have some written for you. Thank you, Chair Metzger, Chair Breyer, senators and representatives, for letting me speak to you on this issue. I have more questions than answers.
Yes, and please identify yourself.
I'm Deacon Jesus Espinosa. I'm a deacon at St. Alexander's Church. In what way is this law going to benefit America? Is that benefiting me personally? How is this law going to further the pursuit of happiness that this land is offering, the American dream? Is the American dream only open to those countries that are far away, such as Germany, wealthy countries that can't come here? I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say to you. Representative Buckley was asking for suggestions. If you can make a document say this is not a driver's license, it's an ID document, you can also do the other way around. This is a driver's license and not an ID document. Your passport is an ID enough. You accept it. This country accepts it to let people in every day. Why can it be an ID document? Why can the license says this is only a license and let people drive? I believe this is a big problem we're trying to solve with all questions. We need better questions. We need better answers. We need to sit together and let people have their dream. Let us share the road. Let us share this country, the richest, best country, proud to be a new citizen. I hope we do well by them history will be our judge, and in 10 years when our sons are old enough to vote, we won't have this problem. We have it right now. I baptized, I don't know, 40 kids a week, and they're all Mexican, they're all Hispanic, and they're all citizens, or will be. We have many more coming. So I urge you to keep those children in mind when you don't let their parents drive.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Magdalena. Juan Garcia. And Bridget Cook, if you want to come up. And next in line will be George Rodriguez, Denise Sutton, and Maria Delgado. So if you're out there, come on down.
I am the interpreter. My name is Luz Villarroel.
Mi nombre es Magdalena Saucedo.
My name is Magdalena Saucedo.
Y traigo un escrito para ustedes.
And I have a writing for you with a lot of respect.
Congresistas del estado de Oregon.
Congress of the state of Oregon.
Por medio del presente nos dirigimos a ustedes para plantearles.
With the present one, we are here to suggest or to implore with you the, some of the problems
el pueblo del estado de Oregon.
That the people of the state of Oregon will come across.
Debido a la ordenanza firmada por el gobernador en el cual se les niega a toda persona.
Due to the proposal by the governor that it negates to every person
que no pueda comprobar su estatus legal en el país el privilegio de contar con una identificación ID o licencia de conducir.
That negates to them ID or a license due to their immigration status.
No tomando en cuenta que será todo el pueblo del estado de Oregon el que se verá afectado como son solo por nombre algunas industrias, los agricultores, las fábricas y todos los negocios en los cuales se requiere de mano de obra.
You not realizing that this will affect a lot of people, including the industry and the hand labor.
Personas indocumentadas, ya que si les suspende sus licencias, no van a poder seguir yendo a sus trabajos. Yo quiero de decirles a ustedes con mucho respeto que esos agricultores ilegales, indocumentados, tienen una licencia para ir a su trabajo.
This will affect the farm labor who will not be able to go to work.
Cultivan las mismas frutas y verduras que ustedes mismos, señores congresistas, consumen.
They harvest the food that you, congressmen, consume.
Las personas que les planchan sus ropas, los mismos que les costurean sus ropas, los mismos que limpian las yardas de ustedes mismos.
The same people that sew your clothes and clean your yards.
Necesitan esas personas una licencia para conducir a sus trabajos, a llevar a sus hijos a los doctores, a llevar a sus hijos a las escuelas, a hacer diferentes necesidades.
They need a driver's license to take themselves and the children to the doctor, to take them to school, to achieve their necessities.
Muchos sabemos que la comunidad indocumentada es la que hace trabajo que las personas que cuentan con documentos no pueden hacer.
This group of people are the ones that are doing the jobs that people with documents are not able to do or willing to do.
Pero sí pueden colaborar para que este estado sea un estado progresista.
But they can collaborate to make sure that this state is a progressive state.
Yo quiero ser énfasis en algo muy especial.
I want to make
it. Ustedes nos prestan atención y ponen en sus documentos que van a revisar, que revisen las personas que está el gobierno federal les obliga a toda persona indocumentada y no indocumentada a que haga un reporte de income tax. ¿Por qué el gobierno federal sí obliga a que haya un reporte de income tax y no nos dan derechos? Que yo pienso que también tenemos derecho a tener que se nos respeten nuestros derechos.
I want you to examine the documents and you will see that the government already requires us to turn in a report on our income. And I think with this you are violating our rights.
aunque no sean aunque sean indocumentados, ellos aportan para la economía de nuestro estado.
Even though they are undocumented, they give a lot back to the economy, even though they may not be documented.
Yes. Señores senadores, congresistas, les pido que si ustedes quieren un Oregon de respeto, un Oregon seguro, que se le dé licencia a las personas que puedan demostrar que tienen un número para hacer sus income tax, porque es gente que sí trabaja, que no es criminal, que tiene de qué vivir, que no es una carga para este estado. Dios les bendiga.
I want you to give permission or this kind of license to people that have shown that they have paid taxes, that they have a number to prove that they are working. They are not criminals, they are hardworking people. May God bless you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Juan Carlos Garcia. I angrily say to you not to let this law pass. I am the voice of all the children in my school, well, most of them. You call Mexicans terrorists, but to me they are angels. If you take their license away, you take your fruits and vegetables away. Because if they can't drive, then they can't pick food for us. You people say we are bad people, but you push us to be bad if you take away our privileges. Please don't take our license away. As a U.S. citizen, I am against this proposition. God bless America and God bless you.
Thank you very much for coming.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Chair Metzger, and representatives. I want to thank you for allowing me this opportunity to be here this afternoon and to speak with you. My name is Bridget Cook, and I'm the executive director of a nonprofit in Forest Grove called Adelante Mujeres that serves immigrant families. As you know, we live in a global economy, an economy that depends on a global, mobile workforce. In order for the economy to function, it requires a fluid workforce. It is a trans-border economy and requires a workforce that is also trans-border. We all know this, and we must assure that our laws and regulations take this into account. I am here today to ask you to consider how we can develop sensible legislation. This is an issue affecting the entire country, and Oregon has an opportunity to take the lead. I encourage you as our elected officials to seize the opportunity to create legislation that addresses the true economic reality we live in, a reality that requires immigration, and in so doing, provide leadership for the rest of the country. In addition to the serious concerns about public safety and the economy, I also want to address two concerns regarding the negative impact this new ruling will have on the children. I direct an organization, as I mentioned, that provides services to immigrant families. First, we will see an increase in child anxiety. Responsible parents will make a plan for their children, a plan so the children will know what to do if mom or dad doesn't come home one day. Can you imagine the effect such a conversation will have on the children? What kind of an impact would it have on your children? Imagine these children trying to concentrate at school, trying to get along with their peers, trying to do their homework. Many of these children are legal citizens. Imagine how they will feel knowing their mother or father might not come home one day. Secondly, we will see an increase in familial violence. The increase in stress under which families will live is not to be taken lightly. Stress is a major factor in domestic and familial violence. When we live under tension and stress, we react in ways we normally would not. Immigrant families already deal with the stress of poverty. Do we want to add an additional burden to their lives? Again, it is the children who will suffer the long-term impact of violence in the home. In conclusion, I want to thank you for listening to me today, and I ask you to use your leadership to develop sensible, wise legislation that truly takes into account the economic reality in which we live. Let's set the standard for the entire country. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you get started,
sure.
He's ahead of us. So, George Rodriguez, come on up. And you're Denise?
Yes, I'm Denise.
Okay. And then Maria Delgado. Okay. And then next would be Servando Gonzalez, Damaris Santiago, and Jesus Mendoza. So if you're out there, come on down. And we had George first, so if you want to go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Jorge Rodriguez. First, I would like to thank you for this special opportunity that you have given us to express all concerns. I hope that after you hear us, you will be continue to give us the privilege of driving safely without putting at risk others in the community. The only way to ensure safety on the road is by driving with a license. I would like to help people that need to go places and that do not have a mode to transport. I am currently able to help them without any worry. Why? It is because with a license and insurance, a person feels secure. If the government takes away our licenses, however, many people will be continue driving despite the fact that they do not want to disobey the law. Many people have different needs and reasons to drive it. It is not necessary to describe this because many of you are also parents, neighbors, and have people that depend on you. For this reason, you will understand how we feel and how our dependents would suffer. Please help us to help others. Also, some of you might not believe it. What happens to this day is important to us. We also love Oregon, as you do. It is for this reason that I ask in the name of all those that would be affected, that you do not leave us without licenses. If you revoke this privilege, you are causing a great problem for the greater society of Oregon. You don't want to hurt Oregon, do you? Those that will be affected by the change in this law are not. Nor will we ever be the enemy. We will always be with you. We will share in the good times and the bad times. Therefore, why would you want to persecute those that not only love this country but special Oregon? Please be fair and make the best decision in favor of all those that live in this most beautiful state. Please do not forget that we believe in you, and it is for this reason that we await for the best decision. Please do not forget that all of us love Oregon. Please help us to keep driving safely and on Oregon's highways. Do not forget that accidents happen. Nobody ever knows who will be involved in the accident, whether it be between legal residents, illegal immigrants, or citizens. Accidents just happen. Please remember that security is first. Security should always be first. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm going to, again, I'm not good at this because I want everybody to be able to say what they want, but we want everybody to have a chance to talk. So try to keep your comments down to 2 minutes, and I might have to start interrupting. And Denise.
Hi, I'm a legal Hispanic American citizen. I'm with a group, Oregonians for Immigration Reform, and you don't speak for me. I'm Puerto Rican, and my mom was born in Puerto Rico. I'm a granddaughter of a migrant worker, so we know what it's like to pick the fruit and do the jobs that nobody else wants to do. My issue here, and I'm going to be leaving the state soon, because I don't have special ed services for my son, who has high functioning Asperger's and a disability that Oregon does not want to diagnose. I get really tired of hearing the stereotypical remarks due to race and racism and the media distorting the truth. A lot of stuff that was spoken at the DMV was spoken to address the governor and him being criminal and him not providing a democracy. Well, this is about as close as we get, but I don't really feel like we have much of a democracy here when we allow people to disrespect our laws and rules. We are a nation under God that has a constitution that should be upheld. I come here from a family of immigrants, and we came to Ellis Island. I'm Puerto Rican, Italian, and Irish. We all come from somewhere. And if we were to allow this open border to continue and to continue to give out driver's licenses, we would deny people from other places to come here who want to come and come to this great country. Another thing that I have issue with is the benefits that go to illegal immigrants. I'm a taxpayer here, and I cannot get services from the health department. I cannot get services for food stamps. I cannot get legal help either. I've gone to people because I'm trying to get out of a marriage that, you know, has been very abusive, not physically, but verbally and mentally. I don't feel like I can go through with it in this state, and I am fleeing to the state of Florida so that as a legal Hispanic citizen, I can get services. I feel that the discrimination is against me and my heritage and against us as American citizens. I don't feel like we've got equal time with the media, and a lot of people don't come out for these things because they don't feel like they have a voice. And that's why you're getting a lot of the people that are illegal immigrants. One of the things is that I hear over and over is we won't be able to drive. What about highway safety? Well, what about us being a nation of laws? What about us upholding the rule of land? If we allow these people to come over here, what will the population be of Hispanic births? Has anybody looked at the consensus report? We talk about global warming. We talk about emissions in the air. Who is putting those extra emissions into the air? And why aren't we addressing that our health plan is accommodating these people at the expense of a senior not being able to get medication, at the expense of somebody having a kid with autism that cannot get the services in the public school system? Why don't we address the real issues that are not being addressed, the issues that are for the American citizen? We have a constitution, and slavery has been abolished, and this is promoting a modern-day slavery. And if you continue giving these driver's licenses out, you are going to say, oh, it's okay to have slaves in the United States, and we need to do away with this. We need to uphold the rules of law. We need to make our country safer, and we need to be able to travel to other places and have our IDs be valid. We are one in seven states that doesn't have real ID, and I think that these people are wanting special rights. They want to not go in, like, as an American citizen, I'm required to show who I am, and they should too. And it's not an issue about bigotry. It's an issue about rule of law and about them following the same rules that we as American citizens have to go through. And thank you.
Thank you.
And by the way, this is my mom from Puerto Rico. They were very poor. They came here for a better life. And if we keep allowing this, we won't be able to have a better life. You'll see more people divorcing and more people leaving your state.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm the interpreter, Luz Villarroel.
Okay.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es María Delgado.
Good afternoon. My name is María Delgado.
Soy madre soltera.
I'm a single mother.
De dos niños, uno de 9 y una de 8 años.
Two children, one 9 and one 8.
Hoy vengo solo para pedirles que analicen bien la situación.
I come here only to ask you to analyze the situation.
Sé que es difícil, pero no imposible dejarnos con las licencias.
I know that it's difficult, but it's not impossible to let us have our license.
A mí en lo personal me afectaría.
I would personally be affected by.
En general en sí.
In general.
En transportación.
In transportation.
Ir a la clínica, ir al trabajo.
Go to the clinic, to go to work.
Buscar comida para mis hijos.
To look for food for my children.
Mis hijos nada más dependen de mí.
My children only depend on me.
Es una gran responsabilidad para mí estar a cargo de ellos.
It's a great responsibility to be in charge of them.
Y ahora con esto es una situación muy fuerte.
Now, with this is a very strong situation for me.
El que ahora se me estén cerrando las puertas.
And the one that which all the doors are going closed.
Por todos lados.
Everywhere.
Se necesita una identificación.
We need an ID.
Válida y para poder tramitar papeles.
Valid so that we can do our paperwork.
O simplemente para llegar a algún lado.
Or simply to be able to get somewhere.
Y me pongo a pensar.
And I start to think.
En el futuro de mis hijos.
In the future of my children.
Ya que ellos son ciudadanos norteamericanos.
Since they are citizens of this country, of the United States.
Yo me preocupo porque ellos tengan lo mejor.
I worry because I want them to have the best.
Un futuro mejor que yo.
A better future than mine.
Yo soy una ciudadana.
I am a citizen.
No soy una criminal.
I am not a criminal.
Yo cumplo con mis taxes.
I pay my taxes.
Yo tuve un problema de inmigración.
I had an immigration problem.
Se me pisotearon mis derechos.
My rights were violated.
Como ser humano.
As a human being.
Tuve un proceso como criminal.
I was treated as a criminal.
Lo cual hoy no quiero que vuelva a suceder para tanta gente.
I don't want this to happen to so many people.
Yo pertenezco a un grupo de mujeres.
I belong to a women's group.
Que actualmente estamos sobreviviendo.
Actually, we are surviving.
En lo que los procesos de las demás continúan.
In, while the process of the rest go forward.
Es muy difícil para nosotras.
It's very difficult for us.
Poder sobrevivir ante esta situación.
Try to survive in front of this situation.
No soy ninguna terrorista.
I'm not a terrorist.
A mí no me detuvieron robando.
They did not detain me because I was stealing.
Trabajando.
They detained me while I was working.
Y muy orgullosamente estuve en el dichoso cuartito que le llama uno de hispano.
And I was very proudly detained in a Spanish or Hispanic room.
Tengo certificados de cumplimiento de ir a juntas con padres.
I have certificates where I have abide by my by the demands that I attend parent teachers meetings.
Certificado de buena trabajadora en una empresa.
Certificate of a good employee.
Soy buena ciudadana.
I am a good citizen.
¿Y por qué catalogarnos como criminales y tratarnos igual como terroristas?
Why do you treat us as criminals and as terrorists?
A Dios me encomiendo.
I put my life unto God.
Y en sus manos de él.
And in his hands.
Y de ustedes dejo todo.
And in you I leave in your will.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Servando Gonzalez. Damaris Santiago. And Jesus Mendoza. And next up, we have Rebecca Shine, Alejandro Jimenez, and Adi Marino.
Muy buenas, pero muy buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Para mí, estoy muy triste y muy apesadumbrada en mi corazón. Soy Damaris Santiago García.
I'm Damaris Santiago García, and I'm very sad in my heart.
Soy una humilde en mi país, México, Morelia, Michoacán, compositora. Voy a llevar muchas cosas para componer de ustedes, de aquí, de este país. Estoy muy contenta y me gusta y está muy bonito su país y todo hermoso.
I'm a humble writer from Mexico, and I am going to take back a lot of stories to compose and to sing about. And I'm very happy, you know, to have met this state, but...
Es la segunda vez que vengo a este país con visa de turista.
It's the second time that I have come to this country with a tourist visa.
Y me da tristeza lo que está pasando esta vez.
And I'm very sad to see what is happening this time.
Con todos mis hermanos hispanos.
With all my brothers, Hispanic brothers.
Yo que todavía mis años tenía fantasía en esta cabeza pensando.
I had a fantasy in my head thinking about.
Que todos ustedes, los norteamericanos, los trataban bien.
That all of you North Americans treated them well and good.
Me duele mucho y con todo el respeto ver lo que sufren, porque ellos dejan sus casas, sus países, sus padres. A veces regresa.
I'm very sad to see how they get treated because they leave their homes, their families.
Y encuentran ya no esposas, hijos o los padres que ya son sepultados.
And then when they go back, sometimes they don't find their husband or wife or their parents who have already been buried.
Por este sueño americano, señores.
For this American dream.
Cuando estoy viendo, con todo respeto, la injusticia que se les quiere cometer y no darles una
una simple licencia, señores.
When I am very sad when I see that you don't want to give them a simple driver's license.
Ah, yo tengo una hija ciudadana americana, la única.
I have a daughter who's a U.S. citizen, the only one.
Que vive aquí, me siento muy orgullosa.
And she lives here, and I'm very proud of her.
Y les doy las gracias a todos ustedes porque me la han acogido muy bonito, muy lindo.
And I thank everyone who has embraced her.
Pero sí me duelen mis hermanos, mi raza de bronce.
But it does hurt to see my bronze, the people of bronze.
Que entre comillas, el país de Estados Unidos, si lo viéramos humildemente y con un lente diferente,
that if we saw them in it with a different lens,
mi raza es muy trabajadora.
My people are hardworking people.
Es la que siempre ha levantado los campos de siembra.
Is the one that has always uplifted the earth to give us.
Y no por sentirme o sentirnos, como decimos en mi país, muy acá, muy, con mucha fuerza.
Not to be arrogant.
Son los que más han trabajado por este país, Estados Unidos.
Is the ones that have worked the hardest for this country.
Y no digo nada más Oregón, sino estoy hablando de todo el país americano, señores.
Not just Oregon, but the whole United States.
¿Se han puesto a pensar el caos que cometerían si ustedes no le dieran licencia a esta gente?
Have you noticed how chaotic it would be if you don't give license to this?
¿Cómo llegarían a sus trabajos?
How would they go to work?
¿Cómo llegarían ellos a sus lugares?
How would they go to their place?
Donde tienen a sus niños, guarderías, etcétera, etcétera.
Where they have their children, etcétera, etcétera.
Mi país los quiere a ustedes mucho. Y cuando llega cada uno de ustedes, señores, se le atiende bonito. Mi país.
My country loves each one of you, and when you have come there, they have treated you beautiful.
Espero que reconsideren humildemente esta petición.
I hope you reconsider para my humble petition.
Mi gente, muchísimas gracias.
Thank you very much.
Dios me los bendiga.
Thank you.
God bless you.
And again, can I have to make
hola.
It a little faster? Thank you.
Sí, ya puedo. Hola, buenas tardes a cada uno de ustedes, todos los senadores.
Hello, good afternoon to each senator.
Estoy muy contento que me dieron, disculpen, que.
Okay.
Estoy muy contento que me dieron la oportunidad.
Your name.
¿Cómo se llama?
¿A mí?
¿Cómo se llama?
Yo me llamo Servando González.
Servando González.
Thank you.
I'm very happy that you give me the opportunity to speak.
A mí y a toda mi comunidad hispana.
Me and my Hispanic community.
Quiero decirles que yo vivo aquí desde hace 17 años.
I've been here for 17 years.
He trabajado en canerías.
I have worked in the canneries.
Empacando verduras.
Packaging foods.
Después trabajé en los pinos de Navidad.
Then I worked in the Christmas trees.
Y también en construcción.
In construction.
Ahora trabajo en un restaurante que los dueños son americanos.
And I work in a restaurant where the owners are American.
Quiero pedirles a ustedes que no nos suspendan nuestras licencias de manejar.
That don't suspend our driver's license.
Porque nosotros, nuestras licencias,
because our license
forman parte de nuestras vidas,
is part of
y
our
también
life.
La vida de nuestros niños pequeñitos.
And it's also the life of our small children.
Ustedes imagínense que ustedes anduvieran paseándose en calles.
Imagine that you are traveling
con sus bebés,
with your babies,
con el frío que hace ahora,
with how cold
o en el tiempo que de calor que ustedes saben cómo hace de frío,
or when it's very hot,
o cuando
cold,
hace demasiado calor,
or when it's very hot.
Ustedes saben cómo es cuando se le suspende por 3 meses la licencia a una persona.
You probably know what it's like to have your license suspended for.
Ahora imagínense que sea por años.
I imagine being suspended for years.
También necesito mi licencia para manejar, para trabajar.
I also need my license to work.
Para pagar mi renta.
To pay my rent.
Comprar mi comida.
To go buy my food.
Ahora se nos dice que quieren más seguridad.
Now you say that you want more safety.
Por eso nos quieren pedir seguros sociales.
That's why you want our social security numbers.
Yo, ustedes, senadores de Oregon.
Are you senators of Oregon?
Yo les entiendo que muy posible sea orden.
I understand that it's an order.
Del gobierno federal.
From the federal government.
Que a ustedes les están exigiendo.
That they're demanding of you.
Que a todos nosotros los emigrantes hispanos.
That all the immigrant Hispanics.
Muestremos nuestro seguro social.
Show our social security.
Cuando y por eso a ustedes se les hace difícil ponernos esta ley.
That's why it's probably difficult for you to apply this law.
Y por eso les doy gracias a ustedes que no lo han hecho y nos han dado la oportunidad de oírnos.
That's why I'm very thankful to you because you haven't applied it yet and you have taken the time to listen to us.
Cuando dijeron que se iba a hacer la reforma migratoria.
When it was said that the immigration reform.
Pero que sí se iba a hacer, habían dicho.
It was said that.
Pero primero iban a poner seguridad en la frontera.
But first they were going to put safety on the border.
Con más vigilancia y construir el muro.
With more vigilance and to erect a wall.
Ahora la vigilancia ya está.
Now the vigilance.
Y están por acabar de construir el muro.
It's already there and they're almost done with the wall.
I'm
going
to have to ask him to... Okay. Thank you.
Por eso ahora lo que está pasando.
That's why it's what's happening today.
A mi comunidad se le está exigiendo los números de seguros sociales que nunca nos han dado.
You are demanding social security.
Y se nos está culpando que somos terroristas.
You are demanding social security of us, which you have never given to us.
Los terroristas
you have accused us of terrorism.
Son los que secuestran a personas.
Terroristas are those.
Y a quienes usan armas.
Terrorists are those who sequester
y quienes hacen guerras y quitándoles la vida a niños,
and make worse, and
ancianos
life away
y a mujeres
old,
y a inválidos.
And the invalid.
Y a toda clase de personas.
And all kinds of people.
A mi comunidad se les debe llamar.
My community should be called.
Los temoristas de la palabra temor, porque les damos temor a toda clase de trabajos.
The ones that, that fear no jobs, fear not working.
Y acabamos con el trabajo, no importa toda clase de trabajo que sea.
And we end up doing every job, no matter how hard it is.
A todos ustedes los senadores, quiero decirles,
all of you senators,
otras palabras,
you in other words,
yo sé que ustedes tienen sus representantes en Washington, D.C.
I know you have your representatives in Washington, D.C.
Por favor, quiero decirles esto para que se los comuniquen.
I want to tell you so that you can communicate it to them.
Que yo y toda mi comunidad,
my community and I,
únicamente queremos y deseamos un permiso y hasta una tarjeta de residencia permanente para trabajar y vivir en los Estados Unidos.
We want a permanent permit to be able to remain in the United States.
Yo de mi parte no les exijo ciudadanía.
I don't ask you for citizenship.
Porque eso, yo sé que para ustedes es difícil. Nosotros vamos a estar muy contentos únicamente que nos den permiso para trabajar legalmente en los Estados Unidos.
Because I know that's very difficult. We basically are asking you for permit to be able to work in the United States.
Mi disculpa, ya no puedo decirle más, pero tengo demasiado todavía que decirles.
I have a lot more to tell you, but I know I have run out of time. Thank you.
Y muchas gracias.
Gracias. Did Jesus Mendoza? No? Okay. Rebecca Shine? Alejandro Jimenez and A.D. Marino.
Chair Metzger, Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Shine. I'm a business owner of R. Shine, Inc., a community development consulting firm. I work with government agencies and nonprofits like United Way and the City of Portland's Housing Department. I also mentor a number of extraordinary Latino youth. I teach drivers education. I assist them in building their small businesses. Excuse me. This one? Oh, okay. Excuse me. I realize that you're trying to comply with the Real Federal ID Act. I realize that the federal government has put our states in a terrible situation if we don't comply. We also know from history and common sense that because a law is a federal law, it doesn't make it just, and it doesn't mean we should resign ourselves to it without a fight. There are states opposing it, opposing compliance, like Washington. We know it will be difficult. We know it would be messy. We know it would be complex. But this isn't just about a legislative concept 32 or LC 82. This is a step in a series of acts that is about scapegoating a group of people when things are not going well in a country. And as we get into a greater recession, I really fear this will only get worse. I hope when we look back, we weren't complicit in unjust, inhumane, costly, unsafe laws. With all due respect, Representative Buckley and other members of the committee, I don't think there are any good changes to this bill. There's no good to come from this. So I ask you, either here or on the floor if it gets to that, that though it's not glamorous, you be heroic. And you stand up and you be brave and you say no. Thank you.
Thank you.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Alejandro Jiménez.
Good afternoon, my name is Alejandro Jiménez.
Y para hablar con ustedes, senadores, para decirles que necesitamos una licencia.
I came to talk to you and to tell you that we need a license.
Porque para poder ir a trabajar.
So we can go to work.
Y tengo una niña que tiene 20 meses, pero cuando ella crezca me va a necesitar todavía más para que yo la pueda llevar a la escuela.
I have a daughter that's 20 months old, but when she gets older, she's going to need me so I can take her to school.
Ahorita pues la ocupo la licencia para ir a llevarla al doctor y para ir a llevarla también. Ella necesitaría ir al parque para divertirse y yo necesito esa licencia.
I need my license. I can take her to the doctor and take her to the park.
Solamente les pregunto a ustedes que si esto les beneficiaría, si hubiera un accidente y la persona no tiene licencia, ¿quién les va a pagar a las personas damnificadas que no tienen aseguranza por no tener licencia?
If somebody doesn't have a license and they have insurance and they get into an accident, who is going to pay for the people that were hurt when there are no insurance?
Yo creo que la aseguranza no le va a convenir tampoco.
I think the insurance is not convenient for the insurance either.
Y solamente en nombre de todos mis compañeros hispanos necesitamos una licencia para poder vivir en paz y poder manejar nuestros trabajos a la iglesia y donde realmente necesitamos ir.
In the name of all my Hispanic brothers and sisters, we need a license so we can go to church and go to work and go where we need to go.
Gracias por escucharme.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Buenas tardes, mi nombre es Aida Moreno y la señora me va a hacer el favor de interpretarme lo que yo quiero decirles a ustedes.
Good afternoon, my name is Aida Moreno and she has actually given me a written statement but she cannot read English, so I will be reading it for her. My name is Aida Moreno. I am here to tell my opinion on the driver's license changes. I think this change, if it happens, is going to have a great impact on all of us, and it is not going to be pretty. We all, legal or not legal, are immigrants, and we all have lives to live, kids to take to the doctor, jobs to do. We need each other, like it or not. Look at the state that adopted the similar rules, how they are doing. Not good. They are going through a housing crisis, and believe it or not, this has a lot to do because people are losing their jobs since they can no longer drive to them, and that affects businesses and everything else. Please give everyone a chance. We don't want to be in the same shoes as Arizona residents. They are struggling economically and affects everyone, every citizen or not. Not to mention the hit and runs. There's been an increase in total accidents. Let's not wait until one of our kids or friends died in a car crash because the other driver did not have the proper training. I am asking that you look deep into your heart and then think if this is the best for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jose? Yes. And Esther? Diawan?
Madam Chair Bayer and members of the committee,
For the record, my name is, I am Deacon Jose Gutierrez, and I'm the director of Hispanic Ministry in San Anthony Parish in Tiger. We do serve not only the people on Tiger, but also we serve the communities of Sherwood, Tualatin, Wilsonville, and some areas of Portland. And I'm here today as a, first of all, as a U.S. citizen, and also as a pastor of many people. I have prayed with them. They have shared the stories with me. And after reflecting on this, I decided to come and express what is happening in our communities. I have seen the sorrow and the anguish on many parents, but also I have seen the fear in the children's eyes about the situation their parents are going through. I have hearing cry, and I know this is very, very difficult for all of us. And that's the reason why I'm here today in response to the executive order that will require proof of social security number in order to obtain an Oregon driver's license. I'm here with the hope of the members of the Senate will find a way to provide Oregon residents, not just some of them, but all Oregon residents, documentation, and also do not deny, you know, the privilege to drive at, for a segment of our population. I have my timer, so I forgot to put it the impact in our communities in general will be devastating. This measure, without any doubt, will label immigrants as a second-class citizens. We all know the consequences when communities are divided. The people of the United States have come a long way, bringing down all walls of discrimination. And I feel that this measure will only increment discrimination and hate towards the immigrant population. Just recently, my son came from California for Thanksgiving and Christmas, and he forgot, he's studying in California, and he forgot his driver license. And he said, "Wow, how are you going to take the plane?" And I said, "Well, do you have your passport?" He said, "No, I love my passport also." And then I say, "Why don't you go ahead, call the landlady and tell her to send you the passport, you know, as soon as possible." He got his passport. He had a temporary driver license that he received by mail. He went to one of the offices in Sherwood, and he couldn't obtain, even with his passport on hand, his drive replacement driver license. If this is happening to him, which he is a citizen of this country, what will happen with the people who cannot prove their legal situation in the country? We went to another DMV office, and in 15 minutes, the other office handed him the permit to drive, and in a week, he received his driver license. Why? This is my worry. If when the DMV officials will take the law in their hands, and just because someone has a dark skin or their name ends in a C or S, will be denied the right to obtain it. I'm worried that what will the, do I have to carry my passport all the way now? Because also, you know, it could happen to me or anyone that look Latino. That's why, you know, I'm here today. As of now, the sentiment portrayed towards immigrants are very negative. We see in the news, we see in the way politicians express themselves towards immigrants. We see in the activities by groups, many groups that I won't mention here today, but we know who they are. This law, without any doubt, will be the starting point of hateful actions against immigrants, especially targeting the Latino population. In addition, this law will also have a great impact in the economy. Let's also not forget the economic contribution of the immigrant sector to Oregon's economy. As an immigrant, as a taxpayer, as a resident of Oregon, as a person who considers this great state my home, I ask the member of the Senate, please put your conscience in your heart and ask yourself if this measure is for the benefit or security of the state. We as a country, as a state, have come a long way to bring down the walls that divide us. You have in your hands at this precise moment the opportunity to lead us forward or take a great step back in the history of Oregon and the United States. I love this country as you do, but I also love my people, and I have seen their suffering. Please consider all this testimony when you take your vote. Thank you very much.
Thank
God bless you.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Esther López.
Good afternoon. My name is Esther López.
Vengo representando al programa Head Start del condado de Clackamas.
I'm representing Head Start from the Clackamas County.
Soy miembro del Consejo de Política.
I'm a member of the Political Council.
Y vengo también en representación de todas las familias de este programa.
I'm also representing all the families that attend this program.
Es un programa muy bueno, que apoya a todas las familias.
It's a very good program. It's a program that supports families.
Niños con necesidades especiales.
With children with special needs.
La mayoría de estas familias son pobres y trabajadoras.
The majority of these people are poor but hardworking.
Y necesitamos de la licencia de conducir.
We need the driver's license.
Para transportar a nuestros niños a la escuela.
To be able to transport the children to the school.
Y en las diferentes necesidades médicas que ellos tienen.
And to make sure that they have their medical needs met.
Les pedimos a ustedes los senadores.
We ask you the senators.
Y al gobernador que por favor.
And the governor that please.
Analicen.
Analyze.
Cómo afectaría a todas estas familias.
How this will affect all these families.
El que ustedes nos quiten las licencias.
And that you would take the driver's license away.
Principalmente a los niños.
Especially how this would affect the children.
Yo creo que ellos son los principales afectados.
I think they would be the main ones that would
porque
be hurt.
Porque no nos podríamos llevar el pan de cada día, principalmente.
Because we won't be able
las
to feed them.
Médicas que ellos necesitan.
Get their medical needs met that they need.
Las escuelas.
Take them to school.
Ellos son los futuros ciudadanos de este país.
They are the future citizens of this country.
Y como hispanos que somos, por ahora tal vez nosotros no podamos.
As Hispanics, and maybe today we wouldn't be able to.
No podamos agradecerles el que ustedes nos apoyen en esto de las licencias.
We won't be able to pay you or in giving us our driver's license.
Pero ellos tendrán el derecho al voto más adelante.
But they will have the right to a vote.
Y ellos podrán votar.
And they will be able to vote.
Y espero que Dios toque sus corazones.
I hope that God will touch your hearts.
Para que no nos quiten las licencias.
So that you will not take the driver's license away.
Y nos permitan seguir manejando.
And let us continue to drive.
Gracias por esta oportunidad.
Thank you for this opportunity.
De hablar con ustedes y que Dios los bendiga.
To be able to speak to you and may God bless you.
Thank you very much. You did it very good. Okay, so we are now through the people that didn't get to testify last week. Well, evidently we have one more.
Yeah, my name is Esther Villalon. And first of all, I'm a little nervous, but I have a lot of things to say. I'm 20 years old, and I've been living here pretty much all my life. My parents brought me here when I was 3 years old. And for you guys to take the license away, you guys are taking a lot of pretty much all my life. I graduated high school You can check my criminal record. I have no record. I've been doing good in school. I want to go back to college. I have no kids. I just recently got married. I have a sister, which my brother-in-law was sent back to Mexico for the same issues going on with legal. I have two nephews that depend on me. I help my sister since she's a single mom. She needs those kids to be driven to school, pick up from kindergarten, babysitting. I help my sister in whatever I can. Knowing that I don't have any kids and that I can make a better place and be a better citizen, I always try to do the best that I can in whatever situation I can help. And it just it's really upsetting for the fact that, you know, knowing that I've been doing good, and I know a lot of people that are here are not terrorists. We're not here to do no harm to anybody. If we wanted to do that harm, we would have done it since the beginning. It makes me laugh, the same situation, too, because I can't understand that people are being judged just not by having a paper or being able to be a resident or showing proof that we have Social Security, saying that we're terrorists, that we're here to take jobs, which that's not true. I might not have jobs. There's a lot of people. I'm sorry. It's just really upsetting, the fact that what's going on. It just upsets me. We're right here. Right now we're in a place where it's really warm. If you guys haven't looked outside, the degrees are very, very cold. All these people do not go to work because they care about the license, because they want to be able to transfer their kids. They want to be able to go to doctors and everything. I have to show my ID every time I take my little nephew, whenever he has a dentist appointment, whenever he has a doctor's appointment. I have to show my driver's license, showing proof that I'm taking care of these kids. If my sister, which my mom passed away 3 years ago, I have to take the responsibility as a big sister and take my sisters out of school in case they get sick. I can't do that unless I'm on the emergency list and I'm able to show a driver's license, proof of an ID. So I want you guys just think about it, and it's affecting everybody in license, insurance. If somebody comes, if I crash into you, you're going to try to sue me for something that, because I don't have the license, because I'm not proper like the DMV is supposed to. But I can't do that if you guys are not giving me the opportunity to make everything right and make everything perfect. So I just want you guys to just please just think about all the things that it's affecting, the insurance, the economic, DMV. It's just really upsetting for me. And I hope that you guys just pretty much, you know, make this right, please. I'm representing all the Hispanics, all the Latinos, because I am one of them. And I want you guys to know I speak perfectly English. I don't know. Some people even confuse me because they think I was born here. I am illegal. But because I was raised here, I wasn't asked to be brought here. But I'm grateful that I'm here. And I'm grateful that I didn't have to cross the border. I'm grateful that I don't have to work in the fields. But you know what? I give all the respect to all those people who wake up in the morning at 4 in the morning and get that food there. My dad is one of them. And I'm really proud. So please just thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're on to the people who have traveled 100 miles. Paco Marabona. Valoma. Luis Valoma. Does that ring any bells?
Some people left because they came on a bus, so they
had to. Okay. Ileana Torres. Alicia Rios, if you're out there. We're gonna go until 4. We have a lot of names left, so if you can be as brief as possible. If you have written testimony, try not to read it. Just kind of give us what you have, and we'll take the testimony. So, go ahead.
Thank you very much for listening to us.
Yo hablo especialmente por los niños que tienen necesidades especiales. Mi hija tiene, por ejemplo, es alérgica al cacahuate.
I speak for children with special needs.
Ella necesita, por ejemplo, si come una cosa que es alérgica, necesita atención inmediata.
For example, she's allergic to peanuts. If she needs special attention, it needs to be done immediately.
Entonces, si no hay gente que la lleve inmediato a un doctor,
if somebody doesn't take her to the doctor right away, she runs the risk of ruining her health.
Entonces, yo más que nada pido por como ella, no son niños iguales.
Like her, there's lots of other children.
En nuestra comunidad.
In our community.
Entonces, hay muchos niños también en los hospitales que están tienen cáncer, tienen.
There's children in the hospital. They have cancer.
Necesitan. Sus papás necesitan muchas veces transportarlos.
Their parents need to transport them.
Entonces mi sobrina tiene asma.
My niece has asthma.
Sus padres tampoco tienen licencia.
Her parents also don't have driver's license.
Entonces yo pido por los derechos de los niños más que nada.
I'm asking for the children's rights more than anything else.
Así, al ayudar a sus padres, ayudan a los niños.
In helping their parents, you're going to help the children.
Gracias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Did you identify yourself?
Yeah. She was speaking for one of her friends who had to go, so she was on
behalf
of her.
Oh, okay, but...
¿Cómo se llama?
Ana González.
Ana González.
Thank you.
Gracias. Okay, we'll try. My name is Paco Marabona. I want to broaden this out a little bit. I came from the coast, and I took a day off. I am an insurance agent and have been for over 25 years, so I think I have an interesting perspective here. But I've also been in Oregon over 50 years, and I came originally from Cuba. So I am a voter. I am a Latin. I vote. I buy things. I think we have a big community here that does that. I am concerned, very concerned, about this proposed rule because I believe that status has nothing to do with safety. The mission that ODOT has is, as you know, to support transportation systems that are safe and viable, and also that support the economy and livable communities. This rule does none of that. The other thing is, I believe that, first of all, as a member of the public, as a lifelong Oregonian, and member of the business community, everybody driving down that street had better have a license, had better taken the test to get the license, and have insurance. And if you folks do anything at all to do that, to push that away, I'm going to ask you to look into getting a whole lot of liability. And I'm also going to ask you, where are you going to get the funds to run this little police program? We don't have funds for children, for seniors, for housing, for education, and yet you're going to come up with another, ICE program. This is from the same people that brought us Iraq, from the same people that brought us Katrina. They are illegal wars. They are illegal actions. If we want to look at illegalities, perhaps when the whites came here, they took the land away from the native Mexicans and the native Indians. We've never really dealt with that issue. I believe we need to set aside, and I don't think we should ever talk about anybody as being illegal, because they're not. A human being is not illegal. We have, and I would say that you folks, I would question the legal basis. You do not have a legal basis to undertake this action, because the governor doesn't pass laws. The legislature does not pass laws that impinge upon Social Security and immigration. Those are federal laws. You don't have the legal standing. Secondly, so the other thing is, as far as the Privacy Act of 1974 and so on, we have been told not to use our Social Security for identification. Okay? And it is also an issue of identity theft. So, folks, you better really load up on your liability, because you're going to need it. And if you don't act in good faith, you can be individually liable. That is to say, people can come after everything you own. I know, again, because I've run this through my legal team. So, the other thing is, There are over three-fourths of the people that have...
Can you back away a little bit?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Plus you're out of time, but
no,
go
no.
ahead.
over three-fourths... Well, I did quite well. I appreciate that. I wish I was a railroad. You'd give me all the time I needed. Over... Actually, sometimes I'll ride the railroad. But I am a taxpayer in the business. Okay. Over three-fourths of the people that had wrong social securities are citizens. I don't know if you realize that, okay? The court in San Francisco that stopped the implementation of this immigration law said that. People change names. There's minorities. There's seniors. They put the name wrong. Hey, and what I do every day, people might give me the wrong social security or Medicare number. So I do believe that, again, in... as far as requiring people, oh, here's the good news. You might give that. There's a new mainstream out there. There's a beautiful book, and I would recommend it. It's called The New Mainstream. And it is the confluence of all the minorities, not just Hispanic, you know, Chinese, blacks, etc., and the people that support them, which is a lot of the seniors and a lot of what they call the creative class. It's the young people that work in computers, architecture, etc. Yes. and if you doubt it, think about the music that we listen to today. It's world music. It's Latino. It's African. It's hip-hop. How about going out to eat? All the ethnic restaurants. And right now, do you know what kind of a business power that we're talking about? According to this book, after this year, the Hispanics alone are spending over $1 trillion in business. You cannot ignore this. It also has the votes, and it also has the people. But it's not just the Hispanics. It's all minorities and all the people that support them. It's already a majority. So I would just basically say that, to wrap this up, in America, there is no royalty class. That's why we came here, so we wouldn't have the two classes. This type of thing would do that, would set up a royalty class. And if you work this out, what it's about, a lot of people in the right wing would like to have you have this identification process so that seniors cannot vote. So a lot of minorities, they may not have the documents to vote. I have a senior I saw yesterday has a seeing problem. You know, there's a lot of people, hearing problem, that can't get out there and prove the documentation. So here's what I recommend. Keep the Oregon licenses as is. Can continue it the way they are, and let the people who brought us Katrina, the people who are bringing us Iraq, let them come up with their own, quote, real ID. They can do that. That is an option. So the option is to have a separate system for federal identification, which, again, I recommend you guys don't have the legal authority to work on. You can only have legal authority for Oregon. And in Oregon, we do not have our own country. This is a state. It's part of, and everything we do for the other people, let's get back to safety, because that's the number one issue. Let's get back to making sure that everybody, the human rights, all of these people, citizens and non-citizens alike, have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that includes having a job, or going to the grocery store, or taking their kids to school, or to the doctor. Folks, this is a dinosaur. What you're trying to propose, it won't fly. And if you make it fly, this book, I guarantee, will make you back up. Because the majority that we have now is the mainstream, multicultural Oregon and multicultural United States. And what are you going to do when somebody from France or any other country comes? They're going to want to drive. They're going to want to have some sort of a license. And certainly, again, going back to where I started, you've got to do a system that encourages people to get insurance and to get the license. This system does the opposite. But again, if you like Katrina, and if you like Chertoff, and if you like Bush,
okay.
You got it?
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right.
Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Eliana. I'm 8 years old. I'm here to encourage you to vote against the Proposition 0722 that our governor has proposed. On Friday, January 18th, I learned about Martin Luther King Jr. and all the good things he did and how great the United States is. But what I don't understand is what we say all men are created equal, but we Latinos in the United States are not treated equally. And what about the rights guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that everyone, citizen and non-citizen, living in the United States should be protected? I feel very sad when I hear my parents talking how many families like us will suffer if they take their driver's license away. I think about how my family will be affected if they can't drive. How will they go to work? If they don't go to work, they will not get paid. That means no food, no house, no clothing, no toys, among other things. How will they take me to school or attend my school activities? How will we go to the store and buy food? How will my parents or family members take me to my doctor or dentist appointments? But the worst thing that can happen is not able to take my brother to the hospital when he gets his asthma attacks. He needs special treatment when this happens. My brother could die. Who would I blame if that happened? Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Alicia Rios, Avon Reyes and Catherine Reyes. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Alicia Rios. Thank you for having us and hearing us out. I am just here to, I'm going to be really short. I'm just here to ask for a driver's license for all my brothers and sisters. I ask that we are treated equally. We have rights, and I am a citizen, and I am asking for everybody to have the same rights that we all do. Everybody needs to work. Everybody needs to drive. Everybody needs to make it to, like everybody has said, doctor's appointment and places. Please don't deny us those rights. Imagine if you were in our country. Imagine if somebody was denying you that right. Imagine that you could not take your children to school, that you could not go to a job. Imagine if you were denied that freedom. Put yourself in our shoes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Me llamo Virginia Flores.
My name is Virginia Flores.
Yo represento a los padres que sí nos. Ay, me pongo nerviosa.
Okay.
Mi razón de estar aquí es porque necesitamos la licencia, principalmente yo que tengo 4 niños.
I'm mainly here because I need my driver's license. I have 4 children.
Y los tengo que entregar personalmente muy de temprano a babysitter.
I have to take them to their babysitter very early.
Y voy a trabajar housekeeping, que necesito ir en casa de casa.
And I am a housekeeper. I go from home to home.
Y esa es la razón de mi licencia que necesito.
That's why I need my driver's license.
Y otras amistades que trabajan conmigo, que son mujeres solas. Y mantienen a muchos hijos que tienen y trabajan muy duro y necesitan su licencia también.
I'm also speaking on behalf of other women who work like myself and need their driver's license.
Y eso es todo.
Thank you, that's all.
Thank you. The Reyeses, are they here?
My name is Catherine Reyes, and I'll speak also on behalf of my husband.
Okay.
We're from Washington County, and I've lived there all my life, as well as my parents, my grandparents. And I just don't really see any, like, positive outcome to the bill, you know, the way that it's written currently. And I wish I was more educated and had more time to really have some better ideas for, you know, ways that this could be changed in a more positive way. But right now, it would just, it caused a lot of stress for our family, just having to give rides and not being able to spend as much time with our family because of, you know, having to deal with public transportation and, you know, giving other family members car rides here and there, depending on things. So just thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Alicia Bartolo, Anastasia Hernandez Vasquez, Anna Cardenay. Pardon, see? Come on up. Go ahead.
I'm Anastasia Hernandez Vasquez, and I'm a registered voter, and I'm also an immigrant to the United States and naturalized as an adopted child. And I would like to say that I believe with all the good intentions is why we're passing these executive orders. But I would also like to open the eyes to the fact that just because somebody doesn't have a driver's license has been proven over and over again does not mean that they're not going to drive. And I would ask that you guys go on with the driver's license because as a taxpayer, as an insurance payer, and as a licensed citizen, the people who are going to end up paying ultimately are the people who are driving legally with driver's license. My husband is an undocumented alien, and for him to go on supporting my family and to keep us off of the welfare system and the housing system and all of those, we need him to work alongside of me. We both are working. We both pay taxes. We are both trying to become, you know, under the law, legal. And we would ask that you take that into consideration, that this does not only mean that the parents are going to be able to drive or not drive, it means some of us are going to have our spouses give up their jobs, which means, you know, my family already qualifies for financial aid. We qualify for welfare. We qualify for housing. My husband is too proud to let us claim that. But if he was made to not work because he could not drive to work, we would have to, and we would have no other choice than to get help from the system. And we would prefer not to. So there's many other families out there like me, and I think I speak on behalf of all of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Alicia Bartolo and Anna Cardency. I'm going to read off a couple other names. Alejandra Aquilar, Dagoberto Morales,
Buenas tardes, gracias por poner atención a nuestras peticiones, a lo que nosotros pensamos. Yo estoy aquí porque estoy en.
Thank you very much for listening to us. Good afternoon. Thank you for listening to our petitions. I am here because.
And your name again.
Sí, estoy en contra sobre. Mi nombre es Alicia Bartolo.
Alicia Bartolo.
Yeah. Thank you.
Estoy en contra sobre eso de que quieren quitar las licencias. Yo tengo un niño especial y él ocupa que yo lo lleve a citas, a terapias. Entonces, nos gustaría que tomaran en cuenta el que siguieran dando las licencias que las necesitamos mucho.
I am the mother of a young boy with special needs, and we need the driver's license. We would like for you not to take the driver's license away.
Sí, y también afectaría mucho porque pues sí necesitamos la licencia para tener un seguro de auto porque pues sí perjudicaría toda la a nuestra comunidad.
It would affect us because we won't be able to get insurance. Sí. And it would affect the whole community.
Es muy necesario la licencia para nosotros.
It's very much needed, the driver's license for us.
Thank Gracias you. Por haberme dado la oportunidad de expresarme.
Thank you for allowing Thank me to you. Express myself.
Dagoberto Morales from Medford.
Thank you again for letting me speak. And just because I come from
Medford. I'm going to stop you for a minute because I know you've been here before and you've had the opportunity to speak, so I want you to make sure that you make it quick because there are a lot of people out here who haven't had that opportunity.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't want to be rude, but...
That's fine, but I understand that because I know also, and thanks a lot of those people to come today too. But also, you know, I think the idea is you have the clear idea what it would exactly would think and what exactly what is the best for Oregonians. I think we are people... We're sensitive, we are the you're talking about lives, you're not talking about senses, you know, real life. And I think we can really can make a difference, or I can continue to make a difference like it did in the past, but you just have to make sure we do it the right way, know that someone designed for us what to do. Thank you very much. We have another 2,000 signatures. Thank you.
Thank you. Mariah Urzola, and I probably really messed that one up. Valinda Paleo, Teresa Lowendorf. I'm going to read three more names, so if you're not in the room, you can come down. Lindsay Messulin, Kathleen Magui, and Martin Gonzalez.
You're doing great now, Chair.
Okay.
Do you guys keep going?
Here we go.
Get it started. Oh, she's getting ready. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon,
ladies and gentlemen. I am Teresa Lowendorf, and I wish to make a personal experience. I came here for the first time when I was 19 years old, and I came here for 2 weeks, and I had, how could I say, and for the first time, and my experience was that all, as young as I was, I find out that an immigrant life in the USA was not like the most USA citizen had. I noticed that the long hours that the people have to work in order to get a job and all the things the immigrants have to endure while earning the lowest wages because of discrimination and the fact that they could not speak English. Well, later on, I came to this country. My parents were here and became resident. It didn't take long for me to become a resident because my father was already here. Before I came to this country, I had some education, and when I came to this country, my father wanted me to continue my education, and I wish I did. I also wanted to work, because I never worked in my country. I wanted to experience, you know, what everybody was going through when I was coming to this country for visit before. But it didn't last long. I went back to school, and my parents were wanting me to go back to school. Later on, I got married, and I had three wonderful children, which I'm very proud of. My children are 29, 26, and 25. All of them have their careers. They were born in Illinois, Chicago, Illinois, and we came to this Oregon 10 years ago. My oldest son is a captain, airline pilot, captain. My daughter has a master's in family therapy, children and family therapy. And I have my youngest son is also has a career. In short, I'm proud to be in this country. But I also think that my story is like the many before me, many immigrants present and many, many, many after me, and the way that we sometimes having something in common, living in the country, everyone under the different circumstances came to this country, adapting to the multicultural, social, and economic environment in order to have the life, to live the American dream. I know that you are wanting to have this license, not to give it to illegal people, but if you I have some statistics here that says that undocumented Latinos pay $20 to $39 million to the state for the unemployment insurance, which goes to other workers, not an undocumented work, illegal workers, or all because they are not eligible. Latinos who are not legal pay more than the share of Oregon income tax, because all the dollars that they are taking from their pay stays with the Oregon Department of Revenue. Invalid Social Security numbers means there are no refunds available, so millions of dollars stay with the state of Oregon. Illegal Latino workers pay $134 million to $180 million in income tax annually. In Oregon, illegal workers add between $1.8 billion to $2.5 billion in the economy as consumers or products and services. Do we want to lose that? Even the smallest business benefits when the money is put into the economy.
So you're actually out of time, but can you wrap it up, please?
Yes, I will wrap it up saying that please create some law that allow illegal workers to make reasonable arrangements to get driver license, while the U.S. government made the arrangements for the people to become legal.
Thank you
for your time.
Okay, my name is Myra Ursula, and I have a presentation for you guys. Sure. Committee. Okay. Okay, the executive order is not well written, and most of all is going to affect mainly business owners. And it will also hurt Oregon's economy, pardon me. Here are some statistics and facts that I found on the website of DMV. It says that around 2.7 million licensed drivers are licensed every year. And there's a little bit more provided for you, as you can see. And here are the fees that are charged for some of the regular registrations and license for people to be obeying the law. And obviously these figures will go down once they pass this law, all of these numbers, which could be used to making safer driving streets and highways. And these are other things that they charge for, and this will also affect the Department of Transportation. And I want you to ask yourself this. Can Oregon afford to lose all this money just to require a Social Security number? As you know, in this summer, DMV will have facial recognition software installed. And my solution is for the DMV, why instead of asking for Social Security numbers, why can't everybody be required to have fingerprints and not a number? The benefits of fingerprinting: it will decrease crimes, help law enforcement agencies, and it will be much safer. In conclusion, I believe that everybody needs to feel safe while driving in the state of Oregon. And by taking away driver's license from undocumented people who are hardworking people and want to obey the law, by driving a license and proof of insurance, just makes the streets not safe for anybody. And DMV's mission is to promote safety for all people who travel or otherwise use the public highways for the state of Oregon. And with this law or order, this is against their mission statement. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Valinda Pelayo. I am here today because I am against the executive order. I am here like many that live here in Oregon, born and raised in the United States, but have illegal parents. As a child, my parents would take me to my dance team and soccer practices, to school dances, football games, and to my community service to volunteer for my school clubs. Of course, each time that I would go to a school event or anything in that relation, it meant needing a licensed driver to drive me around. All of this will be taken away if you take away the Oregon driver's license from illegal people, which means my younger sisters will not have that advantage that I had. As I remember, my parents always followed the laws. We always had insurance on all our cars, and they always renewed their driver's license before they expired. The streets of Oregon won't be as safe as they used to. So just keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Lindsay Messulin, Kathleen Magui, and Martin goes on. Martin has Mark. See, I had an exchange student from Argentina whose name was to me Martin, but his name was Martin. So go ahead.
Well, my name is Lindsay Messulin. I'm an instructor at Chenecuda Community College. I work for a program called HEP, which is a high school equivalency program for migrant seasonal laborers. So the majority of my students are Latino, and a good number of them are undocumented. We don't require documents for the program. I think I could sit here, you know, and regale you with stories of how these are the most responsible, hardworking, respectful students that in my almost 10 years of teaching I've ever dealt with. But you know, everybody has their opinions. This isn't really about opinions. I think no matter what it is that you feel about undocumented immigrants, I think Maida made some excellent points. A lot of people here have been making excellent points. This is a bad idea for a lot of people. I know that you asked for suggestions, and I think that's, you made a really good point asking that, because we need more time. This cannot be something that just can be pushed right through, ready to go. I think Deacon Espinosa had said that as well. We need time to come up with these solutions. We need time to make community events, make more hearings, where people can actually think about what it is that they need to, what would be a good idea, what would be a good answer for this. I also think that I just lost my train of thought. So I think we need more time. I think we need the ability to collaborate, to work with organizations who are working with undocumented people, who are undocumented people, who are have the power to make difference in government, things like that, so that we can collaborate and come up with real ideas. I think Maida also had some excellent ideas on fingerprinting. Deacon Espinosa also said that if we can do it the other way around and make it just an ID card, then there's got to be a way that we can do that where it just allows people to drive. We've heard from everybody in this room, or a lot of people in this room, they need to drive. And just because you take away a license does not mean anybody is going to stop driving. It's just going to create unsafe driving conditions for everybody on the road, including the drivers and the people in the community who have licenses. We just need more time to figure out how to fix it and how to make it right.
Hi, my name is Kathleen McGoy. I'm an executive director of a nonprofit in Portland. And I also would like to reiterate that I feel that taking away the opportunity for people to access driver's licenses not only affects their ability to care for their families, but also affects their ability to invest in the community and care for the wider community here in Oregon. I also am concerned that removing people's ability to acquire a license will also force them to resort to seeking out false documentation, using false social security numbers to try to work around the system. And we've already had so many problems with identity theft. I only think that this kind of legislation will aggravate that problem. So I'd like to thank you for listening to everyone speak today. I really appreciate your time, and I'd just like to request of you also that you take into consideration some of the great ideas that have been thrown out here today, and that you voice them again to the other senators and representatives from Oregon, to the governor. I know that not all of them can be here and listen to everybody's testimonies, but I just hope that you really will speak as representatives of everyone here today, and reiterate again what some of you said, Representative Buckley, Representative Tomei, said when we opened the session about already having some concerns. If you will voice those again to the greater body of Oregon when it does go through to that next stage. Thank you.
Thank you.
estimados senadores y representantes. My name is Martin Gonzalez Martinez. I'm here to add my opposition to legislative concepts 32 and 82. Let me just, you know, say that just as a form of background, I'm probably one of the few people here is that as a teenager was deported to Mexico. That in spite of the fact of being born in Texas. And that's what happens, I think, when people at times do not carry proper documentation. A couple of weeks back, as I sat listening to testimony on this legislative concept, I heard Senator Starr say that in his city of Hillsborough alone, there were thousands of people that were committing fraud. His arguments reminded me of the justification given by President Bush to invade Iraq. President Bush said that there was a threat by weapons of mass destruction. To this day, there is no proof that the threat by weapons of mass destruction ever existed. Congress was slow in requesting proof, but Bush's assertion got us into a war that we're still paying for. I will hope that you ask proof from Senator Starr before you proceed with approval of these legislative concepts, particularly when we hear that the former chief of police of Hillsborough opposes these concepts. I cannot help but think that these legislative concepts and executive order signed by the governor on this topic amount to declaration of war against immigrants in the state of Oregon. Yesterday, I listened to President Bush once again, this time talking about a man of peace, talking about the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. He said, Dr. King offered us, quote, an opportunity to renew our deep desire for America to be the land of promise for everybody, a land of justice, a land of opportunity. It is also an opportunity to serve our fellow citizens, end quote. He went on to say, our fellow citizens ought to understand that by loving your neighbors like you want to be loved yourself, by reaching out to someone that hurts, by simply living a life of kindness and compassion, you can make America a better place and fulfill the dream of Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King is a towering figure in the history of our country, and it is fitting that we honor his service, his courage, and his vision, end quote. Today, I am before you to argue that these legislative concepts offer no opportunity to honor Dr. King, his courage, or his vision for our nation. Dr. King was an equity transportation advocate. He was an advocate that sought to eliminate discrimination, not create it. As I read the legislative concept, I could not find the transportation problem that he was trying to solve. What I did find was language similar to the procedures offered by DMV that institutionalized discrimination based on national origin. I urge you to uphold and restore immigrants' access to driver's license and Oregon identification cards. Thank you.
Thank you. Alice Perry, Sherry Smith, and Dr. George Kuhn. Go ahead.
Okay. Chair Beyer, members of the committee. My name is Alice Perry, and I'm here today on behalf of the Portland Area Program of the American Friends Service Committee, a member of the Oregon Coalition for Public Safety. We are a Quaker organization founded in 1917, recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize, whose mission is to work to end violence and the root causes of violence, injustice. Our Portland office traces its beginning to our work with Japanese-American internees during World War II. And today we're here because 65 years later, during another war, another group is being targeted. We are here today because Governor Kulongoski's executive order and the legislative concepts 32 and 82 requiring legal presence in order to obtain a driver's license will not make Oregonians safer. Untrained, untested, unlicensed, and uninsured drivers are not safe drivers. Having Oregon residents unable to obtain licenses and identification not only threatens our public safety on the roads, it threatens once again to unfairly target a group of people because of the ugly anti-immigrant sentiment that is rampant in our country at this time. Immigration law rests within the jurisdiction of the federal government. Yes, our immigration laws need to be overhauled, but this needs to happen at the federal level in a humane and a just way that looks not only at immigration, but at the root causes of immigration. Governor Kulongoski's executive order and these legislative concepts are not based on any real evidence of security threats in Oregon. Rather, this executive order and these concepts, like Executive Order 9066, that interned over 100,000, are the result of something that is really threatens our society. According to the Commission on Wartime Relocation and Internment of Civilians, the causes of relocations were motivated by racial prejudice, wartime hysteria, and a failure of political leadership. Let's not make the same mistakes again. 50 years after the internment, Congress granted reparations to the victims of Executive Order 9066, and along with the checks, the victims received an apology from the president. But was the damage undone? I think the answer is a resounding no. Like the Japanese Americans and the Japanese residents that were interned, immigrant residents of Oregon are part of the fabric of our community. Pushing these Oregon residents into the shadows undermines the work that many law enforcement agencies have done to build partnerships with communities. These concepts further target immigrants and set the stage for racial profiling, a problem we are already working to eliminate and a grave concern for many. Why make our work harder? There are many ways to make Oregonians safer. This executive order, these legislative concepts are not one. They put in peril any Oregonian who will take to the road, but perhaps more importantly, they put in peril our moral integrity. The way to build security is to build community, not to create divisions. We ask you to restore driver's licenses for immigrants. Let's keep our roads safe and our community safe. And thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
How you doing? My name is Dr. George Kluwen. I'm a chiropractic physician, and I'm here representing past as well as future patients of mine. I want to start by thanking the committee for taking the time here to hear my testimony. My testimony today is focused on the health care crisis faced by the undocumented workers in our community. I've researched the use of health care and emergency room visits by undocumented Latinos, and I found some startling conclusions. According to the journal Archives of Internal Medicine, illegal immigrants from Mexico and Latin America are 50% less likely to use hospital emergency rooms than their U.S.-born counterparts. They are also less likely to visit a doctor or a clinic. The notion that undocumented workers are a burden on the public resources is not borne out by the data, according to the lead researcher of the article. In fact, according to the lead researcher, they seem to be underutilizing the system, given their health care needs. This study also took into account age, health status, insurance status, and poverty level. All factors being equal, immigrants still made 30% fewer visits to the doctor, as well as 50% fewer visits to the emergency room. One of the main reasons illegal immigrants are infrequent patients is because they get nervous when asked for identification. By taking away their driver's licenses, we are reducing their options in case of an emergency. By taking away the driver's licenses, we are giving these people one more excuse not to get the care that they need. Before I became a chiropractor, I had a very limited exposure with undocumented immigrants. Like a lot of people, I believe that there were people that snuck into our towns and cities in the middle of the night, that these people were here for wrongful purposes, such as taking our jobs or abusing our governmental systems. It wasn't until I had the pleasure of working on many of them that my viewpoints have changed. These are hardworking, dedicated people. They're our neighbors, our coworkers, our patients, our friends. We've been here, many have been here for years, and they deserve better than this. The research that I quoted is not just a statistic, it's a tragedy. And we need to come up with a better system in order to make sure that these hardworking people can get the basic things that we Americans take for granted. By allowing these people to keep their licenses, we can restore one part of this equation. Once again, thank you for your consideration, and I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Cherie Smith. I own a very successful insurance agency in Oregon. Approximately $2 million in insurance premiums flowed through my agency alone last year. 40% of those premiums were from Hispanic policyholders. Every application requires I ask the insured to disclose their Social Security information. If the person is illegal, they are still eligible to purchase an insurance policy as long as they have a valid driver's license. Undocumented folks buy insurance policies and get licensed to avoid having uninsured accidents and fines. I know this because I see it every day and spend hours educating them on the consequences of an uninsured accident or an unlicensed driver on the road. I will continue to do that. This is not an immigration issue so much as that it is a public safety and economic issue. Should an unlicensed, uninsured driver hit you or me out on the road, and one of our loved ones is seriously injured, our policy will pay up to its limits. But who picks up the costs after that? Are you ready to sell your home to pay the medical bills to save one of our children's lives? It will inevitably increase our auto and health insurance premiums, because the undocumented, unlicensed folks will no longer be paying into the auto insurance pool as they have been. Statistics from other states show they will continue to drive. Now they will be on the road without ever having passed a driver's exam and further endangering me and my children as they will not know the rules of the road. Uninsured accidents and unlicensed drivers on the road will increase. The implications of revoking the driving privileges of people with no socials will be devastating to the insurance industry, my safety, and my own thriving insurance agency, not to mention the billions of dollars lost in the Oregon economy as these workers begin to stop reporting to work out of fear. I believe my tax dollars would be much better spent on legislators, police, and emergency officials protecting society from rape, robbery, murder, and terrorism rather than focusing on this issue with Social Security numbers. More undocumented Hispanic people would be legal if our government, as well as their own, didn't make it so difficult and costly to obtain Social Security numbers. As mentioned, that 100-year waiting list somebody previously mentioned. True terrorists enter our country so easily. They obtain credit cards and government scholarships to learn to fly planes into the Twin Towers. That's our real problem. And with that, we need to be able to identify a person in Oregon. Taking away an ID card or driver's license takes away my access to this person's history, which they may have been a criminal, they may have been an angel, but how will I know when this law passes and I have no access to know who they truly are? Lastly, God created us in His image. We are all brothers and sisters in His eyes. Do the right thing and keep our families safe on the road by licensing these drivers. Don't hurt Oregon's economy, businesses, access to identities by taking people without social driving privileges away. Do you have any questions of me?
Thank you. Okay. Erica Garcia was the name I called before. Luis Villanoma, Oswaldo Bernal, Margaret Gomez. Maria Van Vliet. Jean Andrews.
She's gone.
Okay. Cecilia Alvarez.
I'll speak for her, too.
Okay. Well, we'll go with that for now.
Members of the committee, and I'm not quite sure. Oh, yeah, we have a senator, yes.
Hello.
he's Nick, and what you were not looking for. So,
yeah.
I want to, first of all, I want to let you know my name is Maria Van Vliet. I am a business consultant with the Small Business Development Center. We work for the Small Business Administration. I work at Clackamas Community College. I am an instructor there, part of the faculty, and I also run my own business. I want to let you know that during the course of these hearings, I was not aware that any of this was actually going to go through. I thought you guys would realize how much this would hurt Oregon and that you would certainly not pass this law. But apparently I am here because it looks like it's going the wrong way. I do have to say that your responsibility as chair and as senators and is to keep Oregon safe and to make sure that we Oregonians provide have a good economy. And passing this order would do neither of those two. The first thing I have to tell you is the fact that if you take away these licenses from these people, you would be losing any point of contact for creating a safe driver. And then you're going to end up with a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, look at these guys. They break the law. Well, yeah, that's because we were not allowed to deal with it on the proper ways. I tell you that if there were ways to make things legal, people would be in the line. The problem with this is that if you take away this driver's license, this is the only thing legal we count on. And I say count because I'm Mexican. I guess I forgot to say that. I am a dual citizen of Mexico and United States, and I count myself as a Latina. I also do business consulting for businesses, and I can tell you that right now the people who are opening more businesses are baby boomers and Latino immigrants. And those business owners, actually, a lot of them are illegal immigrants who have contributed, opened their business, and if you go by statistics, they're about last amount 14.5 of illegal immigrants in the country. If you go just by average, that's 300,000 that are in here in Oregon. Well, I don't see 300,000 people standing around. That means they must all be working. That means they need a driver's license to get to work. So just think about how that's going to affect the economy. I know at least 200 businesses, local businesses in the state, that would be directly impacted by this. That means they're not going to be able to pay their mortgages. Talk about subprime issues. Here it comes. People not being able to make their payments. They're not going to be able to pay for their cars. They're not going to be able to do any of this. So passing this order, you're doing a disservice to this community. You truly are. And I don't want to have to worry about when I'm driving down the road with my two kids if I am safe. And I tell you, my friend Cecilia Alvarez, she owns an insurance agency. And the limit for uninsured motorist hit and run is $10,000. So I hope you don't break that many bones, because that's all your insurance is going to pay. The other amount you will have to pick up, and like she said, you would be needing to sell your home and get ready to do whatever it takes, just because we didn't think about this, you know, through. And I'd rather think twice and do once than do three times and then have to really be concerned about it. So please, think about the big repercussions this is going to have for our state and the economic impact, and do your job. Protect us, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairwoman Beyer, Senator and representatives. Thanks for taking the time to listen to our concerns. My name is Margaret Ethan Gomez. By marriage. I have my bachelor's in Spanish. I've sung in Mexican restaurants and in church for over 30 years. They look at me. They told me to put on a black wig so I could sing in Mexican restaurants. I said, no, I'll sing. I'm gringa, but I have been accepted into the Latino community. My husband is from Mexico, was a teacher in the Portland Public Schools, became a citizen so he could vote here. What I basically have is something for you to ponder this afternoon. Government gladly gives the illegal Latinos their itin. I do a lot of my work in Spanish. Así que lo estoy pensando más bien en español que en inglés. Disculpenme. I do most of my work in Spanish. The government has given the illegals their itin so that they can pay their taxes. They are here. Why not ask for a copy of last year's taxes in order to get their driver's license? Doesn't it sound contradictory to you that they are given a legal number to collect taxes, but at the same time you want to take away the means for getting to that job? So why not use that ITIN, that individual tax identification number that was given to them by our government? Which Anglo in his right mind would uproot himself, leave his family, friends, and food and comfort for fun? No, the illegals are here to survive. I have been working in the Mexican restaurants. I know story after story after story. We need these people. You need these people. We all need the services that these people provide for us that nobody else will do. And you know what? They are our neighbors. They are my family. Los quiero mucho. Thank you.
Alejandro Esparza, Gabriel Gomez. There's another name there somewhere. Arnolfo Alvarez. Jack Davis.
Okay. Go ahead. Sorry.
Good afternoon. My name is Gabriel Gomez Garnica, and I am here because I want to answer to someone that said last time that there is no line to come legal to this country. And I want to say that there is one, the line of the slaves. And I was online since 1997 to 2001, waiting to get an H-2A visa to come to work in the chicken farms. After paying hundreds of dollars, which most people don't have, I came to the place where I had to work 12 hours a day, eating cereal without water and eggs, living with 15 people in one apartment with one bathroom and one room, because the contractor was not ready for the people he was asking for. After I moved out on my own, my visa was not valid anymore. I got a better job. I went to school to learn English. Now I drive at least 20 hours a week to go to work, and I am not asking for myself. I am asking for the people that get the benefits of my job. I work as a horse trainer for a handicapped woman who is 69 years old, going to competitions to California, Oregon, and Washington. I am a member of the Team Oregon and American Driving Society, taking very good places in the horse competitions as a horse driver. But this is my job, which I'm going to do with or without a driver license. What I'm worried about is the kids that come out of foster care in Clackamas County. As you know, once they turn 18, they are on their own, basically on the street. So we have the independent living program. What we do is get donations to buy them everything they need to get their first apartment. I drive all over the Portland area getting furniture that people donate for them. At Christmas time, we wrap gifts for every kid in the program. This year, we donated 18 new computers with a value of $15,000 and hundreds of other personal objects as clothes and school supplies, making a total of $35,000. Please, don't make me stop helping them. They need me. There is no other thing that makes me feel so better than when I see their faces about to cry and they don't find the words to express how thankful they are. I remember some of them trying to tell me in Spanish, but the words just don't come out. They say things like, I can't believe you do this for me, or are you sure this is all for me? Those kids are people that need help to start living on their own and keep them out of the street. They don't care where the help is coming from. We are people that like to share what we have. Please share with us the privilege of driving. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Anup Alvarez. My profession is in the field of Spanish media consulting. I have been living, working, boarding, and contributing to Oregon economy for 22 years. I would like to thank you for your time and the opportunity to be here today in front of you, the legislators of the state of Oregon, some of whom I voted for. I want to express this statement with all my heart. God bless the United States. And it is a privilege to live in this country that was established by immigrants wanting to live and raise their families in a new and promising land in the year 1607. As you all know, we went through a great deal of a struggle before we succeeded. Throughout the history of the United States, establishing itself as a superpower, we Hispanics have always been part of overcoming the struggles to make this happen. We have given our lives in the military, serving the country, contributed to the government and society as a whole. Many Hispanics are illegal today because they don't have the resource to legalize themselves as a permanent residents or citizens of the United States. The government, as well as ours, has made it extremely costly, timely, and difficult. Hispanic people are simply here wanting to offer their families a decent way of living, just like the immigrant people that established the first 13 colonies. Complicating the life of these hard-working family-oriented people here in Oregon by passing a law to eliminate the driving privileges is simply an irresponsible decision. Understand that in the order for them to provide for their families, they will continue to drive. The state of the situation in California is proof of this. There are more uninsured and unlicensed and drivers in California than never before and now. By denying the driving privileges, it will only encourage more unlicensed and uninsured drivers on the road who are a detriment to my safety. DMV stands to lose huge amounts of revenue by unpaid vehicle licensing, driver licensing, fees, and so many more revenue-generating services provided. This is only the beginning of the detriment of to Oregon's economy. Lastly, I would like you to please remember the meaning of pro rebus unum for many ones. And to celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day, I would like to share the excerpt from the I Have a Dream speech on August 28, 1963, on the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold this truth to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Thank you very much. Gracias.
Thank you. We're going to go at least for another 20 minutes. We're going to try to get as many people in as we can. So try to keep it brief. And
the brief version.
Yeah.
My name is Jack Davis. I'm a realtor here in Oregon as well as Washington. I have something on me, and you do all, that every terrorist has too. It's called fingers. Okay, we all have them. Most terrorists need fingers to commit their crimes and whatever they do, you know. Okay, and we heard this earlier about fingerprinting. I will gladly go down and be fingerprinted to maintain my driver's license. You probably, Representative Buckley, you would probably do that too, because I see in you a wisdom that I saw in Governor Victor Attia. Similar. I see something in you.
I'm much older than Mr. Attia, though.
No, with Dr. Dirk, he didn't make you first. Anyway, the terrorists, they have fingers. They may not all have Social Security numbers. They may not all have driver's licenses. True terrorists probably wouldn't give a rip about driver's licenses and what all this stuff is, because they're probably better fabricators, cheats, liars, and whatnot than we would ever realize anyway. They may even have governments falsifying documents for them. This kind of action by our government, when we talk about illegal immigrants, aliens, and whatever, we should be talking about alienating, because this kind of thing will alienate the people that we're trying to work with as our family and friends. Back to the fingers. I got 10 of them. On this hand, I have a ring as well as you do. I got the privilege to fall in love with and marry a Latina sitting right back here. My wonderful wife, Anna. She is also a realtor in Oregon Realty in the Clackamas office. She works as a buyer's agent representing Latinos. Last year, she was number one in sales in her office of over 150 realtors, starter homes and Latino homes. Number one. They, Latinos, I'm not a Latino, you know, I'm a gringo, okay? But Latinos are buying in a down bad market. They're getting their feet on the ground, okay? My wife is proof and testament to that. Latinos are spending more money. They're not terrorists, but they got fingers. They may not have all the things necessary to go down and get a number, whatever, but they all have fingers. It was brought up before. Just fingerprint. Terrorists are afraid of giving fingerprints. You want to separate out the terrorists from the good people? Get to the fingers. That's all I got to say.
Thank you. I have a name that I'm not able to read. The last name is George. Does that sound familiar to anybody?
Spell it.
I can't even spell it. I'm sorry, I can't make out the letters. Anybody? Okay. If that's your last name, you want to come up? Daniel Medina and Bill Hansen. Virginia Gomez. Gonzalo Rodriguez. Go ahead.
Buenas tardes.
Good afternoon.
Mi nombre es Jorge Cisneros.
My name is Jorge Cisneros.
Okay. Y estoy aquí para dar mi pequeño testimonio.
I'm here to give my small testimonial.
Yo vine de California a visitar a unos amigos.
I came from California to visit some friends.
Y me decidí quedarme en este estado porque es muy verde, muy bonito.
I decided to stay in this state because it's green, it's beautiful.
Y creo que aquí la gente es tiene un gran corazón.
I think because the people here have a great heart.
Estuve manejando en California por unos 8 años sin licencia.
I drove in California for about 8 years without a driver's license.
Y es muy difícil.
And it's very difficult.
Porque cada vez que cometía un pequeño error.
Because every time I made a mistake.
Tenía que pagar multas hasta de $2,000.
I had to pay fees or fines of up to $2,000.
Una vez me paró la policía.
One time the police stopped me.
Y no le pude comprobar la licencia.
And I couldn't prove my driver's license.
Llevaba a mi niño de 1 año.
I had my child of 1 year old.
Mi esposa estaba en el hospital teniendo una emergencia.
My wife was in the hospital with an emergency.
El policía le expliqué eso.
I explained that to the police.
Pero no les importó.
But they could care less.
Me bajaron de mi carro.
They got me off my car.
Se estaban riendo de mí.
They were laughing at me.
Y me enojé mucho.
And I was very angry.
Tuve que caminar con mi niño.
I had to walk with my child.
Como 3 millas.
About 3 miles.
Y cuando llegué al hospital.
When I arrived at the hospital.
Mi esposa dijo que estaba teniendo un aborto.
My wife was having an abortion.
Yo no podía hacer nada en ese momento.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't do anything. Miscarriage.
Tuvimos que llamar a mi cuñada.
I had to call my sister-in-law.
Para que nos llevara al hospital.
So that she would take us to the hospital.
No soy rencoroso.
I am not revengeful.
Sigo amando este país.
I still love this country.
Los amo a todos ustedes.
I love each one of you, all of you.
Y yo creo.
And I believe.
Y ustedes pueden sacar algo bueno.
I believe you would make something good out of this.
Que Dios los bendiga.
May God bless you.
Thank you.
Mi nombre es Gonzalo Rodríguez.
Estoy aquí porque estoy en contra de que quiten las licencias.
I am here because I'm against you taking away the driver's license.
Yo ya sufrí ese problema. Yo tenía mi CDL.
I already suffered that problem. I had my CDL.
Lo perdí.
I lost it.
Pero gracias a Dios tengo buenos patrones que me siguieron dando trabajo.
Thanks to God I have good bosses or good supervisors and they continue to employ me.
So, esta medida creo que afectaría económicamente, socialmente.
I think this measure will definitely affect socially and economically.
So, económicamente porque no podríamos comprar carros, no podríamos obtener aseguranza.
Because we won't be able to buy cars or insurance.
Socialmente, si nosotros tuviéramos un accidente con algunos de ustedes, ¿qué pasaría? Nosotros no vamos a esperar al policía, correríamos.
Socially, because we wouldn't wait for the police. If we have an accident, we probably would run away.
So, ¿a quién beneficia esa ley?
So, who would that law benefit?
Oh. So, nada más quiero poner por ejemplo algunas a otras razas, no quiero ofender a nadie.
I want to put as an example other races. I don't want to offend anyone.
So, ustedes ven los files solo inmigrantes.
You see in the fields there are only immigrants.
Latinos.
Latinos. Mm-hmm.
no ven otra raza, ya sea Russians, anybody.
You don't see other races like Russians, anybody else.
So, pero ellos sí vienen a este país, vienen con, se puede decir, con gastos pagados.
They come here with their expenses paid.
And they get better jobs.
They get better jobs.
Uh-huh. Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry, sorry. ustedes los ayuda, este país los ayuda para ir a las escuelas.
This country helps them to go to schools.
Ellos obtienen casas.
They get homes
fácilmente.
Very easily.
Pero ellos nunca van al field a recoger la fruta que cada uno de ustedes, se puede decir, se comen día con día.
But they would never go to the field to pick the fruits that you probably eat.
So, seamos conscientes de que el latino aporta mucho a este país.
Let's be conscious that the Latino supports this country a lot.
So, quiero decir otra cosa más.
One more thing.
Muchos de los que estamos aquí, los que están afuera, tenemos hijos. So, en el futuro, ¿qué pasaría si este país tuviera una guerra? ¿Quién va a dar la cara por nosotros o por ustedes, nuestros hijos?
Many people that are inside here and outside have children, and let's say that this country went into war, who would stand up for this country? Probably will be our children.
So, tendrían el valor civil de llamarlos a ellos, y aunque nos estén dando la espalda ahora.
Will you have the civil strength to call on us, even though you're giving us your back now?
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Raul Velasquez, Simon Batista, Jose Marquez. One here, okay. Jesus, got him. Deanna Rodriguez, Tracy Ventura, Anya Flores. Did we do that? Cesar Salazar and Christian Salazar.
Thank you very much. My name is Raul Velasquez, and thank you, Honorable Committee for Transportation. I'm Director of the Office of Hispanic Ministry and Our Services of Portland, and I'm here to express my disappointment, and I'm against of this decision has been made already done. So, and this is very interesting, because at the beginning, Representative Bayer, you say that the decision is already done and it's going forward. So there's no really nothing too much to do. I was like, okay, so that sounds tricky anyway, but we are here. Okay. So anyway, I would like to bring to your attention how these actions are going to impact dramatically the lives of people, persons, individuals, and human beings like you and me. So, I can also talk for some of those who are the most vulnerable, and the church is here to protect them and speak in their behalf. So, and you'll be just hearing a lot of people talking, and I share with them all that they share with you. So I'm thinking in the same way about the way that this country has been built, about how hard worker are all these people. So, but there's from my experience, all of us, you and I, as a public service workers, we are called to address the needs of our community and looking the way to find the common good. See, but the only way to do this job is dealing with the reality that we have before us. But denying, rejecting, or suppressing that reality is not really the way to solve it. Complex matters do not can be fixed with easy solutions, only enforcing laws. We need we need to find out a solutions with dialogue. Hearing, as you are doing right now, all these people, all of us that we are in the field working and dealing with this reality, with the daily life, as you do. But also, that really concerns me is most of these laws came, or most of these initiatives came, sometimes give me the impression that came from I don't know where, which fears. You know, there's many fears that I could perceive. So, if it is true that safety is a priority, Catholic Church says that every human being has a dignity and has the right to live with decency. So, and this is the basic right. And this country has always defending the human rights. So, and it is shame on all of us that we are not defending those rights for these most vulnerable people.
Okay, well.
And so.
Time is kind of
okay,
up,
we,
so.
We're here just to talk in favor of the migrant, but I have a question for you. So where comes this fear against the migrant community and especially the Hispanic community? Because those actions seems that are going toward targeting, only this specific migrant group. And that's my question for all of you.
Right. Well, thanks. And I don't know that we have to answer, but the one, it isn't a fear on my part that has brought me. And let me tell you, it's been a long journey because it's not one I wanted to travel to this point, and that is not a fear of the Hispanic community or immigrants in general. It is a concern for people who are taking advantage of our state. It is a fear that the citizens of Oregon that are legal are going to suffer in the fact that our driver's license are not going to be valued outside of the state. Other states are already looking at our driver's licenses and saying, you don't have any checks on your licenses. Why should we take that as proof that you belong in the country? Because we don't have any documentation to say that. So it's really a concern about what is going to happen to the rest of the state. And there are people making money off of this. There are people who are paying, are charging people to come into the state, take a license test, they're tutoring them, and then they're taking this license out. So it's not even people who live here. It's not the people in the state that are doing this. It is people who are coming in from out of state to get ID, and then they're taking that ID and they're going to other states and using that as documentation that they are legal. And that is what is driving me, because believe me, I certainly value what the Hispanic community has brought to this state. I recognize that we are all going to really wake up soon and realize what's happening when we do this. Somehow we have to figure out a way to handle this, and the biggest challenge is at the federal level, and they're not doing their job. They're forcing us to use a driver's license as an ID document, which we should not have to do.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ana Flores. I'm a junior at Woodward High School. I'm here today to speak up for my beliefs and to give you an opinion about this new law that will be taking place on February 4, 2008, if you choose to enforce it. I don't believe that the license should be taken away or given out to ones who are not citizens of this country. There are thousands of immigrants in Oregon, which will meet thousands of drivers who would not have a driver's license, and there will be thousands of law violations. If there will be a car accident to occur involving unlicensed drivers, how would these roads be safe? The most obvious answer would be let them acquire a license, so when an accident went to occur, they will be insured. I'm not saying that they're going to be driven like lunatics, because the truth is that they have life like you and I. Whether or not that they're citizens, they should have the same driver's license privilege as you and I. I used to think that it was the land of the freedom, but I just feel like there's no land where you can be free and not seeing people being discriminated against. Taking back to the country they came from just because they're not documented. Those people came to America to raise their children in a better place, to give them what they never had when they live in a country that they could ever, they couldn't even survive in themselves. Guess what? Not only are they helping their families get ahead, but they are helping those who live in America but taking the jobs no other person is willing to take, just because it's a minimum wage or less type of job. I ask you this. Will you go out in the cold or scorching hot weather to help support your family and put food in other tables? You don't know that this takes effect on everyone in this state, including you. If you knew this will affect you as well as everyone else, I wouldn't be here standing in front of you today giving you my opinion, having my fingers crossed to help convince you, please don't let this lab be taken into place. Put yourself in the shoes of my people who are immigrants and work minimum wage just to feed their families of this country. Isn't it cruel and unfair what you want to do? Hopefully, you change your mind and make the right choice, because the law you want to enforce is going to bring you anything but problems once it takes place. If you give everyone equal opportunities, I know this day will be one of the safest of the roads, because you made the right choice and gave those who didn't have the opportunity to learn the rules of the road. Now what if you just shred the unfair law and give everyone a chance, equal opportunities? This could be one of the best places to live. Thank you.
I want to thank everybody who came, and I apologize if you didn't get to come and testify. We still have a couple pages left. The committee will start meeting daily in in February, and we will have other hearings on this. And I want to encourage everybody who can come back to come and talk to us at that point in time. And thank you so much for coming today, and we really appreciate hearing what you have to say. You're gonna have to come up and but it has to be quick, because I'm gonna lower the gavel and because there are other people who would have liked a chance to talk again.
I will get right to it. Again, Jack Davis. Right at the end, you did express your valid concern of why you would agree with this. A lot of the statement and testimony that was heard here today was given not knowing your position. At the beginning, if you would have given that position, expressed it, then these people might have been able to address you as representatives probably a little better. But you have a very valid concern as well. But again, you have the answer. Once upon a time, I got pulled over, and I'm making it brief.
No, you're not. I beg to differ, but then I don't know you very well.
and the federal government has the system in place to deal with the fingerprinting and identify people,
right,
whether they have numbers or not. So you do have the answer. So
okay.
Anyway, thank you for sharing with us where you're coming from.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
House committee is adjourned.